Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, guys and gals, to another episode of the Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? I'm Josh Lee Kwai.
And we're joined today by...
Matthew Arnold.
It's very enthusiastic.
Show me a bit of life there, Matt.
Yeah.
Matthew Arnold.
Oh, good difference.
If you've heard Matt's name before, Matt is the co-creator, co-director, co-everything of video game High School. Fantastic web series.
Which just came out yesterday.
Yes, it just came out yesterday. We are 100% done, and we're recording this after it came out. It's great.
At the time of recording Matt has spent probably 3 consecutive weeks sleeping at the office now, completing it.
I slept home once. I have a lot to make up for.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Girlfriend.
You're releasing... Fiance. You're releasing many hours of content. Hopefully that will make up for it.
We've talked about Video Game High School quite a bit on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
But... Well, Jimmy is one of the main stars. I don't know if we've actually said that. If you don't,
maybe not.
Yeah, they're like, why are you guys talking about this? Jimmy
is in it,
and he's one of the main characters. And the show is fantastic. I say this every week. I'll say it again. If you have not watched it yet, go watch it.
Yeah, there's no reason not to watch it.
Yeah, it's a totally awesome show. I say that with no bias. It's just fantastic. You guys would all enjoy it.
It's literally the biggest web series.
Yeah.
Period. That's it. End of sentence. The biggest web series.
Yeah.
I guess so.
And there's some sweet advertisements right now running around like New York and Chicago and LA, so it's pretty exciting.
I know. I saw some like somebody tweeted out like some buses.
Yeah.
There's buses. There's like a whole train station takeover, which I think happens next week.
Sweet.
Yeah, YouTube realized that they had the show and they were like, hey, we should like advertise it. So YouTube put up a whole bunch of billboards in Chicago, New York, and LA.
Well, I can't thank them enough because... making my dream come true of having my big ugly mug plastered everywhere.
You must be so excited. Jimmy loves the spotlight.
Yeah, I'm so excited about the
spotlight.
Dude,
it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
I mean, it's pretty freaking cool.
It is cool.
You're on billboards in like New York City.
You guys are listening to a podcast by a famous person.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is a podcast from a famous person. How does that feel, Jimmy?
Right now I'm staring at a famous person.
We're all looking at famous people. I'm looking at myself. Speaking of... moving on.
He didn't say he was looking at you, Matt.
I know. I was looking.
I'm not famous.
Matt, you could be someday.
Maybe.
I think you have the potential.
Matt was on Conan O'Brien like a couple months ago.
That's
he is famous.
You are famous.
I'm just that guy with Freddie. I'm like the Stephen Merchant.
You
of the
stole
Gervais
the show on Conan. What are you talking about?
When?
Yeah. You had that
on
very
Conan?
Nice intimate moment.
Oh,
yeah.
When
you
I...
gave him direction.
Oh, yeah. That was funny. But still, it was probably like that guy with Freddie was pretty funny. Like, I don't like being in front of the camera, so I just slip away.
I don't know if our audience, like, most of them even know who Freddie is.
Yeah,
they're magic players.
They're magic players, that's right.
Look up Freddie Wong, also Jimmy's brother.
Yeah.
They're both kind of a big deal on YouTube.
We've done some internet shenanigans.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some show shenanigans, though. We have a good show today. So we're going to talk
about... We got winner.
Yeah, we got some chicken dinner winners here for the contest giveaways. We also have a... we're going to talk about Prosh, Sky Raider of Kerr. We're also going to be talking about engaging in the general idea of multiplayer games, because Matt is a huge board game fanatic. You're kind of the person that reignited my love and interest for all things like
all
multiplayer.
Things.
All things.
Jimmy's life.
All things multiplayer, all things board games, all that good stuff. We have a huge board game collection here in the office. You may have seen it in some of the behind the scenes videos. And a lot of those are card games as well. But like you're kind of the reason that I started playing Magic again, because I walked into Next Gen and you were sitting there opening packs and I was like, uh-oh. I sense
a great disturbance in the force.
Yeah, I sense the exact need to do the exact same
thing.
That's
partially true. I think you got the chicken before the egg there. Because what happened is we started playing board games. Me and you would be the only ones that played board games. So we started playing like Race for the Galaxy, and
Dominion.
Then we got a little bit of Netrunner. We were playing quite a bit of Lord of the Rings, living card game by Fantasy Flight. And we just could never convince anybody else to play games with us. It was always just the two of us. And then we moved into the office and like we had some new employees and like Josh came on and like Eli started working here and like just a bunch of people who played Magic worked. And then one day, it's the other way around. One day I came in
and
you were just like, we're playing Magic now, Matt.
Let me just inform you.
It's gonna be way easier to join everybody else playing Magic than trying to get everybody else to play the other board games.
I think I was big. I was a big influencer on the Magic.
Yeah,
train.
It was definitely because I remember after I was playing Magic, I went in and just bought like a fat pack and like a few boxes, like a few just booster packs. And I think that night I just sent an email to Josh and all it said was the F word and just like
it was like. Screw you guys, I just bought Magic cards.
Yeah, it was like screw you, dude. Screw you, I hate you. And then I've been pretty addicted.
I remember that email because I danced a little jig.
Yeah.
I was like, got him.
Yeah, I remember when you got back into it too because we were talking about Commander and you're like, I want to build a Commander deck. I want to brew one. And then the next, like, 3 days later, you had, like, two decks.
Yeah, it's definitely Commander that got me into it. I didn't play anything else for a while. You guys were playing a Commander game and Craig let me borrow a deck.
Oh, right. Yeah, Commander is what got me back into it as well. So we'll be talking a lot about just sort of continuing on our politics negotiation podcast because a lot of you guys liked sort of the discussion there. But before we start anything else, let's talk about who won the contest giveaway.
Winner!
So we had you guys post your top 10 favorite what you considered to be the strongest red cards on the comments on Rocket Jump. We had over 100 entries. Awesome. So the three winners are Justin Banks, Madison Gibbons, and JB Moscow.
Congratulations!
Congrats, guys.
Yay. How did they win? Did they do something good, or was it just luck?
It was random.
Okay, so I mean, you guys are lucky. Congrats on being lucky.
Comparatively, though, last week we did Reddit, and there was like over 500 entries on that, and this week there's only over 100. So the chances of winning free stuff are significantly higher, and tune in at the end of the episode. We'll talk about
The next contest, I'd say the percentages are going to be even more in your favor.
Yeah,
may the odds be ever more in your favor.
Yeah. So thank you for your continued patronage of the show. You will be rewarded.
Yeah, they're going to get some, booster packs?
Booster packs, play mats, Funko Pop figures.
Funko Pop figures.
Matt will say your name on air, and he'll come up with something
Bob.
Nice.
One of the winners has to be Bob now.
We'll find a Bob.
If you're Bob, definitely join the definitely. Yeah. If your name is Bob,
definitely please enter.
Yeah, definitely enter. You have a good chance. So we'll be announcing all that stuff at the end of the podcast. But until then, let's just dive right into our main topic. Let's talk about Matt a little bit. Let's talk about your history with board games, and let's talk about sort of engaging in multiplayer games in general.
Yeah, it's a question we got, or a comment maybe we got a lot on Reddit, was like, because Commander is such a unique format to Magic, and it's so much more like a board game than other formats of Magic, and so like taking the experiences from board games and other games you've played is like really important, because dealing with more than one person that you're squaring off against, it gets really intricate as far as like the politics and sort of the social aspect of the game. So, you know, you got a lot of experience with that.
Mm-hmm. There's different kinds of games, too. Like Monopoly, you're not really doing that much interaction with your neighbors. But, you know, a different game like Dominion, also, you're not really interacting as much. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you are, but, you
multiplayer
know.
Multiplayer solitaire is what people
Yeah, exactly. But Magic definitely isn't that. But I think there are, like, lessons to be learned from all those different games that you can apply retroactively to Magic that makes you a better player in general. So,
I mean, when you're approaching a game of Commander, like, what's sort of one of the first things that you're thinking about when you sit down at the table, you know, besides like, oh man, I hope I draw a good opening hand.
Yeah.
But are you sizing people up? Are you?
Yeah, I think I mostly just play with you guys. So, I mean, I think there's one time where I said I purposely just go after Jimmy because Jimmy's like the most smiley, like nice dude, and like there's this cynical side of me that like if I can get Jimmy to be upset, then like I just know that the world's an equal place and everybody has like an evil side to them. So like, and like things just work out for Jimmy. So it's like I really just want to get Jimmy.
It's not because I'm the biggest threat at the table, or you know.
No,
I'm...
sometimes it is, but like it's like I want to appeal to that because I think it's also because we played so much together. I can appeal to your emotional side.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, definitely politics is something, and it's fun because you know I'll kind of stalk the various like Reddit forums and stuff. I don't really post in like Netrunner or Magic and things like that, but I'll read stuff, and it's always kind of fascinating to me. Like when Conspiracy came out, I was reading a lot of the comments. It was fascinating to me, but like how many people were just upset at like the idea of I had the best deck and then all three people teamed up against me and I lost, like the game sucks.
Uh-huh.
And my thought was like, dude, you have social problems. That's a part of the game now. Like that's
you
like,
also yeah, that's what I think. You don't intrinsically understand the game if you think that the strength of your deck is actually the deciding factor or should be.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. It's like the thing I like about social games is that there's definitely something really fun about building decks. Like, that's one reason we all play it. Collecting decks, building decks. Like, there's a lot of aspects of Magic that's fun. But if there's no like social interaction or no kind of diplomacy for me, I might as well just build a deck, run it through a generator, and just see statistically if my deck's the best. It's like, because there's a certain point where it's like, oh, I want the best deck to win. It's like, then why even play with people? Like, just build it and then be like, this is the best. Like, I'll run it and statistically I'll win 70% of the time. Like, that's no fun. Like, that's why good games always have some sort of randomness or some sort of luck involved. Like, the best games are the ones where they put you in situations where the outcome is not in your favor and you have to kind of pull outside the game circle to make something to allow you to win, whether it's like doing something like diplomatic or whether it's like finding like thinking about an obscure like rule or whatever it is. It's like that's what they say. Like the way you tell the best golfers are not the guy who can just like hit it off the fairway onto the green. It's like the guys who can, you know, have the ball behind a tree and find a way to get it out.
Right. They're eking out small advantages in a lot of different areas. Yeah. I was saying in sports, right? The saying is, that's why we play the games.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you just lined up and looked at everybody's statistics, then you wouldn't have to play. But it doesn't play out according to the statistics every time.
No,
that's
fun.
Why you play the games.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if your deck is supposed to be better than everybody else's, that's why you play the game.
Yeah. And it just means you didn't play the game well.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
There are two steps of the game. There are building the deck and then playing it. You are a good deck builder if you statistically built the best deck, but you're just not good at the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely, I mean, that's the big thing about like Magic's about a lot of small decisions that sort of add up over the course of time. Mm-hmm.
See, I think I'm much better at playing the game than I am at building a deck. Like, we were just like, I'm like, my project deck is done. And then within like 13 cards, I'm like, these are bad cards. Like, how did I not notice these before? But I'll manipulate a lot, like, and I'll play the game pretty hard in Commander. And there's a lot of ways to play it, like, and even like using my newbie status is like a good way to play it.
Yeah.
You hide behind like, oh, I don't really know what these cards
really
do.
Know,
I'm just
or like,
play
guys,
this.
Don't team up on me. I'm like, I'm gonna kill all you guys.
That's what I was gonna say. Because you say, oh, my strategy is just go after Jimmy. Yeah, that's a cover. Like he's playing the game right now because I know you, Matt. Like you want to win, and I can see it in your eyes. And you'll use the, oh, I'm just gonna go after Jimmy as a cover.
Exactly.
Because
then everybody's like, that is funny. Maybe we should all go after Jimmy, get Jimmy upset. I'm like, but I'm really coming after all you guys.
Exactly.
Like that's a lot of the fun of the game, which I totally get. Like that not being the appeal for some people, but you know, I think that's why EDH is, you know, I think that's why I like EDH. So, you know, we've been talking about getting a standard, and again, I like the deck building aspect of it, but and it's just so much more interesting to go up against group dynamics than it is just one on one.
And it's especially because it's an internal format, every deck you ever go against is you're never going to see the same deck twice.
Yeah,
you'll see similar archetypes, but it's
well,
very
and
different.
What that does is it makes it less about the cards, it takes, you know, some of the spotlight off the cards. I mean, you're never going to go all the way away from it, but it puts it more on like your personality, your ability socially to sort of interact and manipulate or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great, especially when you're newer to the game.
Yeah.
Even when you're not, though, is just taking some emphasis off the cards because, I mean, let's be honest, like you said, you don't want it to go to, like, whoever is willing to spend the most money, they just win every time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not, I'm not saying that's what Magic is at all levels of play, but it can have that aspect to it.
Yeah, and I think EDH is more dangerous than kind of getting to that point just because it has so many, it has essentially almost every card you can use. There's only a few that are banned. And because you only have one card at
deck,
a time, and it's 100, the randomness of your deck, like the consistency of your deck, is essentially nothing.
Right.
Like, even, you know, you can get a few tutors in there, but still, at the end of the day, it's like, I could play my Prosh deck like 20 times, and like, it'll be almost completely
different.
You'll
never draw the same
sequence
of cards. Yeah,
it'll be completely different. Like, that's why you have to do redundancy of your cards to kind of simulate the idea of having three or four cards at a time.
Yep.
EDH is definitely a game that can be like, a card gets played, and a guy wins. So, if that's the way it works, you have to use other things to maybe make him not play that card. Pressure him, you know, socially, or like, or promise something else, or make him think that if he does it, something else will happen.
Yeah, threat of removal.
I remember the situation we were playing, and maybe you guys already talked about this before.
Yeah, we mentioned it, Cryptic Command.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going nuts because, like, everyone was just letting Jimmy say he was going to play Cryptic Command. I was like, guys, that's the same as him playing it every time.
Yep.
If you don't do something because he threatens you to play it, he's played it. And it happened like four turns in a row. D just kept saying, like, oh, never mind, I won't play. He's going to use Cryptic Command. I'm like, he just did. He played it for free because he did.
Because you didn't do anything.
It's the same effect as if you had played it, and now he's going to do it next turn also.
Yep.
And D, I don't think is that social of a gamer like as much. So like he was just like, well, you know, I don't want that effect to happen to me. I'm like, But Jimmy's just running the field right
well,
now.
Well, it's also understanding the nature of multiplayer, which is like D doesn't want to be the guy. Why would he do that when the next person could get their spell countered?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, and that's the thing. You don't want to be – it's like you're looking around and they're like, well, there's four of us.
Yeah.
One of us is going to have their spell countered. I don't want it to be me. I'll let it be one of you three dudes.
But then the next step is to use that to make yourself the martyr.
Yeah.
And make and then take the spotlight off of him and be like, it's like you're right. You don't want to be the guy to waste your card on his cryptic command. But one, you could be calling his bluff because it may not be the card he actually wants to counter like you may know that Josh has a better card. And two, it's like, all right, guys, I'm going to play it. I'm using his cryptic command. Remember that. And people are like, all right, you know, maybe I won't kill Matt next turn because he got rid of the cryptic command.
Yeah, and actually I really like that because it's like you've got to do something.
Yeah.
You have to do it anyway.
Yeah, something
so
has to happen.
So now I better get some equity for it. And that equity can be social.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be like, okay, you don't, you know, people feel like they owe you a little bit or they're going to give you a little bit more leeway. And that's super powerful. I don't think people use it enough in EDH. Yeah. It's like whenever you're doing anything in a multiplayer game, you need to be framing it for everybody in the way that's most advantageous for you. So it's like, if I'm attacking somebody, then I need to tell everybody why I'm attacking that person in a way that, like, sometimes it's just like, I have to attack with this guy because it makes him bigger.
Yeah.
And you have the most life, so it hurts you the less. So I'm going
to
attack you.
I'm a good guy. I'm being a good guy to do this.
Yeah, I'm not trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Never mind, I'm trying to win the game in the end. You know, but that's just another thing. I'm going to do something.
Yeah.
But instead, you know, I've seen a lot of players, you know, we played just the other night and we played with, one of the co-hosts of the Masters of Modern podcast, and his name's
Glenn
Jones, and he's played on the Pro Tour.
Yeah,
he's you know he's super spike.
Yeah, like
you know
he knows.
Always tries to win, and you know we're playing a conspiracy draft format with a bunch of chaos stuff in there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he's got a 1-1 out like really early, and he's just looking around. He just attacks somebody. Doesn't say anything. Just attacks somebody.
Yeah,
and it's like that's what spikes do, man.
Yeah,
they just attack, and it's like. For one damage, you just made that person so that as soon as they get something out, they're going to come at you. And all you had to do is be like, I got to attack with this guy because of XYZ, and then maybe he doesn't come after
you. Well, what I like about Commander is that, you know, there's the, like, that guy, like, in Standard, he will always win. And if he played against a bunch of other spikes, he would win. But there's, like, because Kessler's like that, right?
Yeah.
And there's nothing more fun than if you play the social game, you can beat them because you know exactly what their move is 100% of the time because they don't make any different move. They're going to maximize. And once you know what their deck is and once you know how they're going to play, it's like, well, it doesn't matter what I say. He's going to play this. So then it's about making Jimmy, like, attack him also.
Yeah.
It's about getting everybody else against that guy.
And the spikes are always, like, totally bewildered by it. They're like, why did I win? Why is everybody attacking me?
Yeah.
Like, what the heck's going on?
It's like, that doesn't make sense. They should attack him because he's the better, he's the more dangerous. I'm like, but you're acting like a dick, so we're all attacking you.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, at a certain point, everyone's reacting socially. They're not reacting to, like, this guy played a card, but he did it really quietly, and you were attacking everybody for four turns, so they don't even care. They're just coming at you.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, why it's fun, because, like, you know, playing – so, like, Prosh is a commander who's kind of like a nuclear bomb, right? So, like, there's different types of commanders, and some of them can be, like, really subtle, and they kind of just, like, help you out. And then there's ones that are Prosh where it's, like, you put it out, and you've essentially made a statement, like, I'm going to win this turn.
Yeah.
I'm going to mess up everybody. So to have to be, like, the guy who is, like, kind of manipulating and, like, not making everybody look at you, but also playing Prosh is like that's why I love my Prosh deck. Like, and same thing with Kalia. Kalia's the same way. I play both decks where it's like once I put my commander out, everybody's gonna look at me and be like, we're all gonna kill you now. Because if you put Kalia out, you're clearly gonna swing and put out, you know, the dragon who gives you the second turn, so then you swing again and put out another guy and then put out Avacyn, and then you're all invincible and you win. So it's like, can I convince you guys that that's not happening? Like, can I literally roll the nuclear bomb into the land and just say, like, guys, I'm not gonna use it. What are you talking about? Look at Jimmy. And like, that's what's fun to me.
Yeah.
So that's why I love Prosh.
Fortunately, you can, like, the more people you add into the equation, the dumber the group mentality is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The group brain gets smaller the more people
That's also why I love playing with somebody like Kessler, because it's so much easier to play Prosh or Kalia if I can point at Kessler.
Oh, yeah. Like, I find the same thing.
If I'm playing Prosh, I'm going to go infinite next turn. I can still be like, dude, guys, like, I have Prosh, whatever. Like, you know my deck. I have like 10 bad cards. Kessler's perfect. He's all foils. Like, look at this guy. That deck's like $10,000. Like, attack him. I'm not going to do anything. And then you guys are like, you're right. And then I'm like, Avacyn, you're all dead. You're like, beep. Sorry.
Oh, beep.
I'll get used to it.
Yeah. Yep. That's pretty much how it happens. It's easy, too, is because it's also like someone like Kessler creates prior history for being a spike in Commander specifically because you played against him before, or like he was a person that taught me and he was the one that beat me when he taught me.
Yeah.
So I'm never going to forget that. That it wasn't, he wasn't like in it to teach me to be like, let's all play together. I'm going to let you win this first one. It's like, let's all play together. I'm going to beat you to show you what it means to lose.
Yeah. He's like the Kung Fu master who like hits your hand every time you do something.
Well,
wrong.
That's the thing about spikes is you know they're just going to kill you as soon as they can every time.
Yeah.
You know, and so if they can kill you, they will kill you.
Yeah.
Which forces you into the mode of, like, a lot of times, like, I got to kill them.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they will show me no mercy.
Yeah.
They Whereas, like, I'm looking at Jimmy, I'm looking at you, Matt, and it's like, sometimes those guys dirtle around a little bit. Sometimes they sometimes they can kill me, but they don't.
Yeah. Like, Jimmy may have an infinite and be like, but that's a boring way to win tonight. Like, I'd rather try this card. Like, and that's, you know, we'll be in the same situation where it's like, I've played.
That statement that I would make to myself sometimes, because I've been like, I could. But let's do this.
Yeah.
Would make a spike's head explode.
Yeah. Because it's like, again, because I'm not saying EDH isn't like a well like designed game, but I don't take the winning aspect of it like super seriously because, again, as we talked about, like, it's not the same consistency. Like,
it's just essentially
a 10,000 card pool. Like, it's an impossible to balance game design. You know, it's like, it's just insane. Like, it's a ton of fun. So, like, I treat it in that way. I treat it in, like, there's some strategy. The deck building's fun. The deck building's fun in almost, like, a collectible sort of way where it's, like, really, like, you want to build, like, a fun deck. By the end of the day, it's, like, you know, it's, like, resistance or something. Like, it's a lot of, like, manipulating with people and playing a fun game and seeing what you can make happen, you know?
Yeah.
I think, too, though, like, in the end, like, being that way, like, not just killing everybody when you can every time, like, as soon as possible, is, over the long term, actually raises your percentage chance of winning the game.
Yeah, because
right?
they're not gonna come after you right away.
You don't get meta'd. You don't get like, oh, he just destroyed us the last six times, so let's just, like, without even thinking, everybody, let's just kill him every time now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in poker. I used to play a ton of poker, and there's what we call rocks in poker, and these are players that, like, they never come into a pot, they never come into a hand unless they have awesome cards.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, what the problem with that is, like, every time one of the rocks at the table, and they're really easy to notice, every time they raise into a pot, you're like,
fold.
That guy's got pocket aces. Fold.
Yeah.
And then they're always like, man, every time I get a good hand, nobody was willing to bet into me.
Yeah,
yeah, like, dude, because you don't give any action.
Yeah.
You don't get any action when you have a not-so-good hand.
Yeah, you're giving it away. We know you don't have a good hand.
Exactly. So I'm not going to give you any action. I'm just going to fold, and you're going to make the minimum you would with those pocket aces. Whereas, like, me, I come in with all kinds of crappy hands.
Yeah.
And then it's like people see me turn over, like, you know, an 8-7 offsuit to win that pot, and they're like, that guy plays crap. And he raised coming into that hand.
Yeah.
And so next time I have pocket aces and I raise, they don't put me on aces. They go, that guy will raise with anything.
Yeah.
And then you can actually win real money.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same thing in EDH. Like, if you just play hardcore like that all
the time.
You can
win real money in EDH? Sweet.
Hey, don't gamble. Don't gamble, kids.
Don't gamble.
Don't gamble. Don't gamble.
Yeah. So, Matt, what do you think is the ideal number of people in an EDH game?
What are you talking about? I think, like, 3 to 4. I mean, I think I like 4 more than 3 because 3 is, like, the amount of social dynamics is pretty minimum. And almost a 3-person game, you almost essentially will always get, like, a 2v1 sort of mentality. Unless, like,
or 1v1 and the other guy just sitting there.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, like, 4, I think, so, like, 5 is, like, a magical number to me for, like, most multiplayer games. The only problem with EDH versus, like, other kind of social games is that there's just so much to keep track of. Like, 5... Four people, like, you know,
the board state
within
gets so
7 turns in EDH, you can have like 14 cards that all have like a novel on them. And it's like, and even if you know cards, sometimes you have to be like, what the? Like, there are times where we were just playing, I'm like, wait, his card just makes every land he does. Oh, crap. I didn't know he had that. You know, it's
it
can be a lot. So I think 4 is probably my favorite. But like, if it's like a good night and you haven't drunk a lot and you're kind of like, it's your first game, like, 5 can be really fun. It's just like, you definitely have to be like, in it. Like, otherwise, there's so many times that we played 5-person games where it's like, I just totally did not realize, like,
you literally
Tiki was out or something crazy. I was like, oh crap, okay, he's gonna win now.
I think 3 is a pretty bad number because it's usually is 1v1 and whoever is not involved in the 1v1 wins because they sit there, let the other two people
use their cards
off.
And then they just kill whoever's left.
Yeah.
4 is awesome.
Yeah.
5's pretty good. 6 is too much.
Yeah, 6 is getting too much.
What you usually have to do with 6 is you either have to split into 3v3 or like 3-headed giant or 2v2v2, which is the 3-person problem again. So, yeah, I really believe 4 or 5.
Because Conspiracy does 5, right?
4
Conspiracy
to 5.
Conspiracy was designed by 5 people playing
it. Because 5 is a really There's something about once you get five people in, social dynamics really work in like the right way. Because even like four, it's very easy for people to get like 2v2.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Or again, it's in a weird way, you also get like essentially a triangle where people are competing and one person can be out. Whereas five, it's like there are individual five. There's enough people.
There's enough layers.
There's individual vendettas. You know, like two people can be in a vendetta. And there's still three other players, so it's not like they've left out somebody. And that can you can kind of have all these different circles.
And five-player, I feel like if you're having an individual vendetta with somebody, you don't automatically lose.
Yeah, because
again, something else can be happening on the other side of the table.
It could be
that
two versus one over there also.
And then it allows a lot of shifts
of somebody like, hey, that guy's against you, I'll help you out like with him if you help me against these two guys. And then all of a sudden they're angry at each other. So it shifts.
Well, and also that other person may go, you know what? Instead of teaming up with those other three person, I actually have a better chance of winning if I team up with the one guy.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, you're very unlikely to get in those like kind of lopsided situations with five people.
And 2v3, you have a chance to win that fight.
Yeah, it's not
2v1. You don't. They're twice as powerful as you. Yeah, and if they're only 50% as powerful as you, or more powerful, then you have a shot.
Especially in EDH, where like again, one card can essentially win the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about alliances at the table? You know, this is something that's come up a lot. I see it on Reddit all the time, which is like, what's allowed in your play group for alliances? And we've never discussed
what's
it.
Allowed?
We don't have. Yeah. Like people
well,
have
some
people
decide like, at the table. That's the point of the
yeah, whole yeah, yeah. And that's how I feel. Like people want a lot of rules to be created. And for me, it's like you have a play group.
Yeah.
So what is comfortable for your play group? Like it's not a competitive format. You're not at a tournament. Yeah. You're not winning lots of money you know, like you are in poker.
Yeah. Again, I think it's the same problem. It's like if they're asking like what's allowed, it's like you've already kind of broken the social rule and you're trying to like write a rule book of you're trying to make alliances a rule. Uh-huh. And once it's a rule, it's no longer like a social game. It's it's just another the other players are now just tokens or they're just dice. There's just another thing that there's a rule about. And it's like, well, I can't, once I say I ally with him, I can't break that alliance. It's like, well, then there's no social game anymore. Like the fun is there are no rules. Like the rules are the rules of the game. Everything you say at the table is just, it can be lies. It can be emotional appeals from the night before. It can be anything. Like that's the fun of it. We've never even discussed that. Like,
it's sort of unwritten laws, whatever happens.
Well, the rules are the social rules. Like, if you say you ally with somebody, there's no rule saying you can't break it. But if you break it, there are consequences outside the rulebook, which is that guy's pissed off.
Yeah, that's what I like. There's no rules. There are consequences.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there are lots of consequences.
Yeah, and then knowing your friends also kind of lets you know, like, who you can break alliances with. You know, it's like, I go, it's like, if I do an alliance with Kessler, I know it's only for his gain at that moment. And I also know that when I betray him, there's not going to be a personal vendetta. Like, next game, he's going to be like, I'm going to kill Matt. He's like, whatever. Yeah. Matt just did what was most efficient. Like, Whereas, like, with Jimmy, like, if I screw him over next game, if I screw him over one night, the next night, I'm like, I know Jimmy.
He's just going to come at you.
I know Jimmy's coming at me.
Like, for a couple nights.
Yeah, it's like I beat him with, like, his new deck, and then the next night we play, he's got Kiki out, and he's, like, looking at me. I'm like, oh, Jimmy's just, like, totally pissed from last night. And that changes my entire thing. It's like, okay, be nice to Jimmy. Maybe he'll win this first game. Like, let him get it out. And then, like, you know, it's like you kind of just got to play with it. You just got to know what, you know, who you're going to piss off if you break the treaty or not.
And I think that the important thing to know, too, is that, like, when you create an alliance, it's, like, it's almost on you to decide when you are going to break that thing. Because,
you know you're going to. At the end of the day, one of you wins.
Exactly. At some point, the line has to be crossed.
It's the Hunger Games, man. It's like, at some point, at some point, your team is the only people left, and you have to turn and shoot each other.
Yeah.
So it's just about when do you do that.
Yeah,
and it's expected that's going to happen. You know it's going to happen.
So I think that is the only rule, and it's a rule of the game, which is like, one person wins the game.
Yeah, one person wins
the game.
You can't make an alliance where that at the end you just shake hands and you're like, we won. That's not how EDH is played.
Yeah.
At the end of the game, one person wins it. So whatever other alliances you want to make in the meantime is fine, but at the end of the game, one person wins.
And the fun thing about EDH is that you can essentially lose, but like, you can lose in a way that still feels like you've won. Mm-hmm, like, you can be essentially second place, and you can, like, drop, like, a 400-400 creature and kill everybody but don't quite finish off the last guy, and you took that risk, and then they beat you, and, like, you got second or third, but you're like, whatever. Like, you know, I got to see something crazy happen, you know?
And I feel like I still kind of won or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I did stuff. It's like I killed the most people. I did something crazy.
Because
you're never going to win every game of EDH. Like,
Well, I mean, that's why a lot of people do, like, points based on if you get rid of a player, then you get that point. So yeah. It's not necessarily like you're the last person standing. Whatever.
I don't love that stuff as much.
Yeah, it's just like, but it's like really the big thing is like do whatever you want in your own playgroup. If you want to be, if you all are like crazy manipulative nutso people, you can just mess with the meta. You can boldface lie to someone the entire game and never be honest. Like that's your choice, but it's also your friendships.
Yeah, I mean we could because like. We could totally all just like place like four of a card in the deck and nobody would know. Like,
yeah, well, don't cheat. Yeah. Don't
nobody
cheat.
Nobody would know.
I mean, there's some things like in it, like you're not allowed to give information to just one player. Like you couldn't show like your hand to just one player.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
can't like, you know what I mean? Like those, I think you got to stay within the rules of Magic as far as that's concerned.
Like what information is public and not public is like a legitimate and like an important rule for any sort of board game. Because computer games, it's like, that's something that you can make. That's 100%.
Yeah, you can make it so. Yeah, exactly.
That's public information. That's private information. And I think that's one of the few things that kind of really decides social interactions. And, you know, usually when you read board game rule books, that'll be one of those things that you, as you start reading more or playing more games, they're made very, very clear because it's like essential to the way social dynamics work. It's
yeah.
like, you cannot share this information, or you can share this information, or you have to share with everybody when you do share it.
Yeah, exactly. Like
those
play
are designed rules.
We play Resistance a lot, and in normal Resistance, which is essentially kind of
the game
like,
would be broken if you could share
if
with
you could
one
share,
person.
Yeah, it's kind of like Mafia, where there's some people that are a part of one faction or the other, and if you could just show someone else what it is and to reveal it, it kind of just breaks the foundation
the
of the
broken.
Game. Yeah, so
yeah, when it happens.
And I think EDH, it doesn't break it in the same way, but it breaks the spirit of it.
Yeah.
In that, like, you can't have that kind of alliance where, like, you're showing them a card in your hand and to only one player. And
well, because what you're doing
else.
Is you essentially become the reason. I don't think there's any rules with alliances is that there's still uncertainty.
Right.
You could tell me, hey, I have Cryptic Command. I'm going to play it next turn against him. If you play this, I have no certainty. The moment you show me the card, we've essentially become one player with a 17-card hand,
right,
you know, and a 200-card deck. Like,
but I think you could say that and then show everybody the.
You could show everybody,
command.
Because again,
you have
everybody
to show
then
everyone.
Has the same certainty.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
But you can't make one person 100% certain of what you have,
and everybody else is only 50% certain or whatever. Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
It puts everybody at an unfair advantage.
Yeah,
that reminds me of when we were playing Jimmy, and I was trying to get Jimmy to do something, and he was like, "Well, Glenn will attack and kill me," and I was like, "Oh, don't worry, I'll save you, Glenn. He won't be able
to
do that."
and like,
then Glenn goes, "I brimstone volley you," and Jimmy looks at me. I'm like, "I can't save you from that. I can save you from his creatures." And so Jimmy just died, and I was like, "Crap! I didn't mean to lie to you, but I did.
Like, I know it was
I could
like
only stop his
lie.
Creatures. Yeah, I could stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that game—it's a good that we bring that up because I ran into a fundamental problem which comes up often in EDH games, which is like you need to know how to race the race correctly. You know, because it. Sort of, I feel like a lot of EDH games and just multiplayer games follow the same format. We're all at the same level when we start, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll have different opening hands, but essentially we're all at the same life total, and we go around the circle. And at a certain point, people start pulling ahead, staying behind, drafting on someone else's sort of coattails or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in that game, I went out, I popped out way too fast, way too quickly, and then the attention was shifted. So like, there's a lot of also, in terms of when you make an alliance, why you make an alliance, and whether or not it places you in the position where you get more aggro or get less aggro.
There was an interesting moment in that game, and it was sort of half political and half to do with the cards, and I feel like I sort of misplayed it. Anyway, I'll lay out the situation. Jimmy was playing a deck, and he had a bunch of Vent Sentinels. Basically, he had a Defender deck, and he could tap the Vent Sentinels, and they could do a combined total of 10 damage for 4 mana.
Yeah.
And so that basically, once you're there, then on somebody's end step, before your turn, you do 10 damage, and then you untap, and you do the last 10 damage. So you could just kill somebody instantly.
Yeah.
So he gets to that point, he has 4 mana up, and it comes to my turn, I'm right after him. Now, I don't know who he's going to kill. There's 3 other players in the game. And so I'm like, who are you going to hit, Jimmy, blah, blah, blah. I have a creature that taps another creature. So I can force him to use the Vent Sentinel right now.
Yeah.
And so that's what I decided to do, because by forcing him to use one, I could see who he hit with it. And
you
if
know,
it was
you
me.
You now have information.
Yeah, and if it was me, he hits with it. Then I know I have to do something like kill those things or do what I can. And it just so happened I had a board wipe. I had a Wrath in my hand. So what I did is I tapped his Vent Sentinel. And so in response, he used it on Glenn to do 5 damage to Glenn. Now, at this point, I make a huge blunder. I still wipe the board.
Oh, you should have kept me around.
Yeah, because
that's
stupid.
Exactly what you should.
It's totally stupid. I played it perfectly up till then because I actually had a card that forced you to show what you were going to do.
Yeah.
And then once you'd hit Glenn, you were sort of you had to finish him off.
Right. I, at that point, I was actually going. I was like, yeah.
You were going to have to, yeah.
And guess why I wanted to kill Glenn first? Because he's the best player at
yeah,
the
he's
table.
The Pro Tour guy.
Yeah.
And, but no, like an idiot. Like an idiot. I'm like, I'm just going to wipe the board. And I did. And then.
You end up decking yourself.
Yeah, well,
you decked yourself.
Yeah, I was way ahead, but I didn't have a win condition. It's a long story, but anyway, that was the seminal moment in the game because I could have let Jimmy kill Glenn
and Eli,
then
too.
Wiped the board, and then I would have just been Jimmy's basically done at that point.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it would just been me and Eli rather than.
Well, actually, at that point, you could have even positioned me to get rid of Eli, and then
maybe
wipe the
I
board,
mean it
know?
Was really dangerous to keep you around for very long because you could just instant kill somebody.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like that was a political blunder. Because I did everything right up to finding the information
right,
I needed, and then I just responded wrong. Yep.
So by forcing my hand, you essentially created an alliance, but you destroyed the alliance without realizing that you had made
exactly.
one.
Exactly. Exactly. Because as soon as you didn't hit me with it, that was the signal of like, oh, you're not going to hit me with it because you have to do 20 total damage, and now you can only do 15 to me. That'd be stupid.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, speaking of stupid.
I think board wipes always put you in a dangerous situation because I think the number one... The number one thing, at least in our group, the number one thing people are trying to do in EDH, like even above winning, is to like have fun.
Yeah.
And like a board wipe is a very precarious thing where if you do this certain sort of board wipe that slows the game down and just frustrates everybody, like you're
puts dead the restart.
Next turn.
Yeah.
Like if you do the fun board wipe that like everybody's like it's funny and like the next person like you did it and the person has Avacyn and like they have everything out so now suddenly there's a big monster that everybody has to like if you do it and Jimmy's still alive with 20 creatures it's fun because everybody's like oh crap we got all kill Jimmy
yeah
but if you just like if you play you know destroy all lands. And we've already been playing for like an hour and a half. It's like, are you, oh my God, like, you're dead. Like, why do you even do that? This is not fun. Like,
that's actually the type of thing that will cause people to kill you for a couple games after that.
Yeah, because it'll be like, it has. I remember, like, one of the first Commander games I played, Craig, I didn't even know Craig very well. He played that, Destroy All Lands. I'm like, I was so frustrated. I was just like, I was frustrated at the game of Magic. I was like, that shouldn't be a thing. That's like getting 2 hours into a movie and then right before the ending being like rewinding to the beginning and be like, hey, rewatch everything again. It's like, I don't want to do that. Like, what's the fun of that? And I was so frustrated. I'm like, I'm going to kill him every time because I never want that card to be played again.
Yep.
That's the great thing about EDH, though. It's self-policing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's why I'm like, hey, fine, destroy lands. I don't care. But be willing to pay the price for it. And the price will be... People will hate on you for many games after that.
Yeah.
Like, you can be a dick. That's, like, my ultimate, like kind of logic and reason. You can be the dick and do, like betray people if everybody's having fun when you do it. Like if you're, like, if it's always interesting and fun and, like, it keeps the game going and it makes the game interesting, people will kind of, like, get angry at you in the moment. But, like, at the end of the day, nobody's be like, oh, that was, like,
that was
a crappy game. Like, that was funny. Like, you know, Matt did that or Jimmy did this. And, like,
no one's going to hold
it against
you. He surprised
everybody. But if you're just, like... If you just do the move and just, like, destroy everybody's land, like, right when something's going to happen, or somebody was playing something really fun that wasn't even against you, and you just countered for no reason because it was you're min-maxing, and you're like, well, if he does kill Josh, it's going to affect me, and you just ruin the fun play, everybody's like, ah, man, that guy sucks. Like, let's kill him. Like, that wasn't fun. Like, let's just kill him. Like, keep everybody having a good
time. You know what's funny, too, is that Craig, the reason that Craig and Kessler both play, because Kessler will attest to he's a spike in Commander, but not in Standard or Constructed, is because they had a friend that would routinely be that guy and wreck lands and do this. So in response, in order to combat that, they had to bring themselves to that level.
Yeah.
And so that has carried on literally from like years past to the game where your lands all got blown up. Like that was a direct result of a seed planted like several years back in another
play.
But
see, Craig is totally the guy who like who will allow like Craig's definitely the guy who will like play inefficiently because he has some crazy idea he wants to pull off.
Yeah.
Right.
And then like he'll do it and like he'll even do it to the point where like he does it. He's like, well, I'm not gonna win, but I wanted to do this. And he does it and like he kills everybody but you and him or something, and then you win. And he's like, it was fun. Like he has like fun combos he wants to pull off.
That's why you don't treat Craig like Kessler,
at
even
all.
Though
like,
they have decks that are of comparable
power. But
occasionally he'll blow up all your lands.
Occasionally Craig will be like, well, they don't think I'm going to do it, so you all die now. Like, he knows that because he's like that. Occasionally he can just pull out the, I'm going to kill everybody now.
Well, it's nice. You know that, like, certain players have that wild card element, and so you play around that as well. It's like, you do, it's like, it's fun choosing your allies.
I think it was while we were waiting in line at Comic-Con, like, because I've never taken Craig as Kessler, where, like, Craig would just kill me And there's like one, we were playing like, I think it was Conspiracy, and we were like both laughing, and like the game wasn't that far along. And I we were talking, and I was like, oh, I'm going to attack, like, I forget who we were with. I'm going to attack him. And we're like, all right. And then it went to Craig, and Craig's like, okay, Matt, you're dead. Do 20 damage. Like, what? Like, it was like turn six. It was like so shocking. I couldn't believe it. I was like, how did you?
Oh,
and I'm like, why are you killing me? He's like, I don't know. I just thought it'd be funny. I'm like, oh my God. Like, it was just so surprising. And it was like the perfect move to play.
That's the Mind Sculpt story, man, yeah. When he just milled me out. And literally died the next turn because that was
and
his
then
whole.
He did it the next game too.
Next
that
game
was,
too.
The
yeah,
kicker.
That
once,
was the kicker.
Once you could take, it's the second time in a row.
Yeah, that's a little tough.
But
little
you know,
to stomach.
I'm never gonna forget that, and that's why it's something I relish because I think it's a great story.
I'm never gonna let you forget it.
Yeah,
like I think there's like this switch I have when because different groups play differently, and if there's certain people playing, then it's like my volume's turned up a little. And if there's other people playing, like we were playing the other night, and we were playing with Eli. Eli's a little bit newer. Eli edits this podcast, by the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's just newer to the game. Yeah. And so, like, he's attacking, and I'm attacking, and he's blocking, and I'm actually giving him advice on how he might think about blocking. Because it's better for our play group if, in the long run, if Eli continues to improve and learn more about the game. And
yeah,
because
he's more competitive, and then it's more fun to play against.
Exactly. You want everybody to be, you know,
it raises everyone's level up at the same time, too.
And so I think it's important to keep that aspect, like, keep your playgroup healthy, like, bring along the new players, turn that volume down sometimes. Yeah. You know, it's okay to have a varying degrees of, like, how competitive you are in any given time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you said, like, EDH is for fun. It's for doing stuff, putting out a 400-400 creature.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to remember that story even if you didn't win that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and what's the point of investing in a deck if you're going to play it with people that don't want to play with you after you've, like, turned it up to
the
max?
Well, no, that's and you're kind of right. It's like, it's even, there's definitely a point where, even within this deck, there's like, you know, there's times where if I'm just playing with like you guys, I might be like, well, I have, you know, Preferous out, but I'm not going to, if I put him out, everybody's just going to, they know what's going to happen. I'm going to put him out. He's indestructible. Once I put out people, it does 24 damage. There's been games where I've had him in my hand and just haven't played him.
Right.
Because I have, you know, I have some Hydra. I'm like, you know what would be more fun is trying to get this Hydra to be a 400 creature. You know, something like that. But like if Kessler's in the game,
screw it. Kill everybody.
I don't
everybody.
Make a single mistake. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to play 100% efficiently, which is its own fun. Like, so it's fun to having those two sides of it, and I think that's kind of what's really fun about EDH is that it can be incredibly competitive. It can be very competitive, and you can play 100% to, like, efficiency, or it can just be like, I'm going to see what crazy thing I can do.
And that's something that I suggest you guys challenge yourselves to do as well. You know, it's your game. It's your play group. You know, you decide how, you know, spiky you guys want to get or how much fun you guys want to have. If you want to just, I mean, like, sometimes when we play, it's just sort of an unwritten rule. Like, that night you go into it, everyone sort of has that same mentality. It's like, we're just going to have fun tonight. No one's going to bring out the big guns. Craig's not going to bring out his turn three in.
Well, that's the other thing.
Deck.
It's like, someone's like, only have, like, I have two decks, you know, and, like, for a while, my Kelly deck, you know, again, both of them still have fat in them, but, like, my Kelly deck for the longest time was, like, really rough because, like, I spent, like, $80 on, like, three cards and then everything else was just, like, what was in the white commander deck plus, like, a few rares. Like, it's, like, I had, like, one card combo. If I got my Kelly and Avacyn out, then maybe I could do it. But, like, you know, it wasn't that good of a deck, but, like, I wanted to play to get used to it and then, like, figure out what cards to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, I either play Prosh for serious or I was playing Kalia for fun and now I'm going to try to finally make a Grand Arbiter deck. But, like, as you said, like, Craig has, like, 30 decks. And there's like one or two decks in there. It's like if he plays, it's like the game's over in three turns theoretically.
Yeah.
And it's like, and you know when he decides, and that's like the first social thing that happens. It's like everybody's like, they're like, okay, what's everybody playing? And like, you know, it's like if I said I'm playing Prosh, like, okay, well, Matt's going to play seriously. It's like, oh, I'm going to put Kelly out. And everyone's like, oh, okay. Like, and then all of a sudden Craig's pulling out his new deck or something else and whatnot, you know. And then, or it's the other way around. Craig's like, I'm playing this deck. I'm like, well, I'm probably going to lose anyways, but I'll play Prosh. Hopefully I can, you know,
you get a chance.
Hopefully I get my ultimate. Yeah, exactly. Hopefully I get an infinity combo in like four turns.
Yeah.
I think, Jimmy, I mean, you've got your Kiki deck. I got my Joyra deck. Like, there's, like...
We have the beatdown decks.
Yeah, if somebody... Yeah. If it looks serious out there, I pull out that deck. Or if I've lost, like, four or five times in a row, I'm just tired of freaking losing, like, I'll just pull it out. Like, you know, it just gives me the best chance to win. And that's okay.
Yeah, no, sometimes you just gotta win.
Yeah.
And actually, I'd say the more fun is when you do pull out the hard-hitting decks and everyone's like, all right, well, I'm gonna step my game up, too.
Yeah.
And
there's also
nothing
more fun than beating somebody who pulls out a hard-hitting deck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, I got my good deck. And then they still lose, and you're...
You're like, but you can't stop a Sarah send it turn one. Like, doesn't matter how good that deck is. I get my Sarah send it turn one with a sword of fire and ice.
Yep, there's literally nothing we can do. Yeah.
That was fun.
That was pretty awesome.
So, Matt, do you have any sort of, I don't know, I just guess tips and tricks from playing so many multiplayer games in the past? Like, what do you find is most effective in dealing with people? Do you find that sometimes the emotional route is the way to go or the logic-based
route? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think we kind of talked about it, which is just, I think, at the end of the day, it's always going to depend on the playgroup. And, you know, I'm trying to say this without, like, insulting people, but if you're playing with a bunch of spikes who are just, like, in it for the game, not having fun, like, you know.
Well, they're having fun. Let's not get that
right.
That's
just how spikes have fun.
Yeah. And to be honest,
maybe they have fun. I think deep down they're just sad, cynical people. But if they are having fun, it's like, then the way to play is obviously going to be to play their game. Like, at the end of the day, it's like you're going to have to play their game. It's always about, you know, you look at the group, you see what the group values the most. It's like any sort of negotiation. The thing you do when you're on the other side of the table with somebody is figure out what do they want, and then you give it to them, right? Or you make them think you're giving it to them. So if I'm playing with you guys, and it's like a night, you know, we're playing at night, and like, you know, there's some beers out, it's like everybody here wants to have fun. That's the ultimate currency. Everybody wants to have fun, so I'm going to play to have fun, and that's actually going to be my best chance to win.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Because
right.
If I can appeal to the sense of fun, if I can appeal to something adventurous and interesting, or if I can appeal to make everybody think it would be fun to team up on Jimmy because he's playing his crazy deck, then, like, I have a chance to win now because that's what everybody's rooting for. But if everybody's playing, if it comes out and we're, like, playing for money and everybody's playing their deck, it's like, if I'm like, let's team up on Jimmy, it's like, no, why would I possibly do that? We're playing for money. All I care about is the money. So you always just need to figure out what the group is into at that moment. And once you know that, then you can kind of figure out what it is. And, you know, sometimes it's more complicated than that because sometimes you have a person who's playing to win while two other people are playing for fun.
Yeah.
You know, so you just have to figure out what people want.
Yeah. And I think actually at the end of the day, everyone has aspects of a Spike or a Johnny or a Timmy in them.
Like, oh, for sure. And people turn on a dime.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's what's fun about Craig or something. It's like there's times you're like, let's just have fun. And then, you know, maybe that guy was having a bad day that day. And maybe he started off having fun, but losing three times in a row or like having
now
his,
he just
like,
wants to
or
crush
having his
everyone.
Infinite combo countered. Like, he needs that win. You know, he needs to go home with a win. So, like, that next turn, he may just be like, whoa, he is, what's going on? Like, he killed me turn four for no reason. He's coming after Jimmy next. Like,
yeah,
you never know. I mean, that's also part of the fun.
Yeah, that or that was their tactic all along, which sometimes I think Craig does, which is just like, yeah, I'm just messing around. And then in the back of his head,
yeah,
like,
because if
this
in his
is how
head,
I'm
the first
really...
three games he's just playing for fun, he doesn't feel like he lost.
Yeah.
If he's like, I'm just going to mess around these first three ones. And then I'm going to murder everybody game four. If he loses three games and wins game four, he won everything. Like, in his head, it's like that was his plan, was just to mess around for three turns, get everybody feeling safe, and then bring out his deck and murder everybody. It's like, then fun. Like, I had a good time tonight. That's what he wanted to do.
Yeah. We all had a good time at that point.
Yeah.
Depending. If my plan was to win the last game.
Yeah. If your plan was the same, then you're pissed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think these questions, like, it's one of the most frequently asked questions about EDH. Is sort of like the baseline of the question is like, how do I make my playgroup play how I want to play?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's not how it works.
That's not
it's
how it
just
works.
Like the game of EDH. Like, you have to interact socially with everybody and get people on the same page. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit of manipulation to get them to where you want them to be, but you can't, through like creating rules, you can't solve that problem. That's it's not going to work.
It's group fun.
Yeah, it's
well, if you start making a bunch of rules, like, hey, if you make an alliance with somebody, I have to be like this, and if you can't play land destruction and blah, 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 then you're going to end up playing with yourself. Like, you're never going to be able to create a group of rules that, like, five people totally agree on and find is fun. Like, you got to do it socially. And like I said, EDH is self-policing. If people are doing stuff that everybody doesn't like, it's going to correct itself because they're going to start killing that guy first or, you know.
Well, I think what's really happening is, like, the unruliness and kind of the craziness of EDH is its strength, and to try to fix it and get it to be something that kind of police, like, to get it to be something that, like, oh, like, now the game rules kind of make it the way I want, is you essentially destroyed EDH. It's like, I always remember,
like, you might as well just play standard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just play standard. Like, the EDH is fun exactly because it's so crazy and unruly. It reminds me of, like, like the first NFL Blitz that came out, like, you could, like, run into run into the end zone and, like, tear down the pole and, like, glitch out and stuff. And, like, it was one of those things where it's like they didn't realize that, like, the fun of Blitz was, like, that was just nuts. Like, it wasn't Madden. And then, like, every year they try to refine it to make it better and better and, like, more polished and stuff. And there's just a point where, like, I was like, why am I playing Blitz anymore? Like,
I might as well just play Madden.
Yeah, the fun of Blitz was, like, when the time was called. And the game is supposed to pause. For some reason, you can still control your players, and you can just tackle people outside the game. And then, like, that was all the fun of the game. And that's how I imagine with EDH. It's like, the stuff that happens in EDH is not supposed to happen in Magic. The game was not designed for 40 life. The game was not designed for multiple people playing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, that's why you have a card like Seer Ascendant is nonsense. Like,
yeah.
I still don't even know why it's not banned in EDH. Like, it just makes no... It's like, if you have 30 life, like...
It's because there are also one mana kill spells.
Yeah.
You know.
But, again, I mean, he's right, though. The card is not designed for a format where you start with more life. Like, the whole point of the card is, like, you'd have to gain life to turn it on.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, it's a pretty good 1-1 drop because it's flying. The fact that it's flying in 1-1.
No, it's not flying until it triggers.
You're right.
Yeah.
But, again,
it's still, like, it's a cool, like, build around me standard card, right?
Yeah.
You're like, I want to get lifelink abilities so I can get over this and then make these guys go.
And then I turn it on.
Yeah, and now that's balanced because it's one mana.
Yeah.
But to drop a one mana card with flying lifelink and 6/6 or 5/5, is it a 5/5 now?
I think it's 6/6.
It's a 6/6.
Yeah.
Is insane.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's over. Again, I mean, as you've seen in that game, like, if you have the right combo early, there's essentially almost nothing. Because lifelink's not as you know, lifelink's essentially just a laying tactic. But there's also a certain point where if by turn 4 you have 180 life, like, it's over. like it would be pretty hard to come back from that, you know?
Until Craig busts out.
An infinite combo. Which, again, that's the fun of EDH.
Yeah,
infinite
exactly.
combo can do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
Stop trying to balance it. Like, just accept the social part of it is.
The game is chaotic. The game is chaos. It wasn't invented by Wizards. It was invented by people trying to have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a good sort of wrapping up point.
Yeah, I really like what Matt said. Like, the things that you're trying to fix about the game,
are
what make EDH awesome.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, embrace that instead of trying to give it form.
Yeah,
like, embrace the chaoticness of that.
Yeah,
and realize, like, that's what's making the game, like, different and fun in the way that it is.
Yeah,
I really like that.
And one final note, something that I've sort of picked up playing over, you know, the course of however many months I've been playing now is that don't be, you know, we're saying all this stuff like don't piss people off or like, you know, just be careful how you make your alliances or who you betray or whatever. But at the end of the day, don't be afraid to win if you have the chance. I've seen this happen a few times where it's someone's like, well, you know, like, I just want to keep it, you know, keep it having fun. But sometimes having fun means shuffling up and playing another game. So don't be afraid to win. Just don't win too hard.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't win too hard too often.
Too But winning is fun. And at the end of the day, everyone
that's
wants
games,
that's
man.
The
that's
real
the
trick of EDH is how to win in a manner that doesn't
piss off everybody.
Yeah, make everybody want to, you know, almost how to win secretly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you can figure out that, and you can hit that sweet spot where you win, but you've won the game, and you look around, and it doesn't feel like anybody else realizes you won.
Yeah. Or most of the table feels like they were about to win.
Yeah.
And you just barely had that last thing.
Yeah. And it's like any of them could have won.
Exactly. If you can make everybody feel like they could have won that turn, and you just happen to pull that card that moment. Okay, great. But it's like, no, I knew I had that card from the beginning. I was going to do it.
I set up that whole sequence. Yeah, exactly.
Or that you guys won together because you beat the arch enemy at the table or whatever. Yeah. Good times.
All right, let's talk about Prosh.
Prosh, Sky Raider of Care. So this is a commander
that... Why does Prosh have two S's in his name?
I don't know. Prosh.
That means cheers as well. P-R-O-S-S-H.
Sky Raider of Care. He came in Commander 2014. He's a card built for Commander. And I'll read his stats. He's a legendary creature dragon, a 5/5 flying, and he costs...
That's enough. That's all I need. I don't need anything else.
He costs 6 mana total for 3 black, red, green. So already there, 6 for a 5/5 is pretty solid.
Flyer.
But, yeah, flying, and that's when we get bonkers. When you cast Prosh, put X01 red kobold creature tokens named Kobolds of Kerkeep onto the battlefield, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast Prosh. The reason this is built for Commander is because the first time you cast him, you put 6 guys out. The next time when he dies, you put 8 out because he costs 2 more.
Which makes Prosh, which is one of the other reasons it's fun, it makes him one of the few commanders who...
You want to
you
die.
Get, well, you get, like, you get it's not really value. A punishment to have to cast him for more mana. It's one of the few commanders that's actually more powerful the more you cast him. Most of the time, it's like, oh, crap, now I got to cast Kiki for 10 mana this time.
Whatever,
you know? Whereas you're like, yes, I get 10 guys out.
Yeah.
Like, it's just better.
Yeah. So, and his final ability, which is one of the most important, is sacrifice another creature, and Prosh gets +1/+0 till end of turn. So he's a walking sacrifice outlet as well.
Yeah, sacrifice outlet, and when commander damage can win the game in 21 damage. If you're a token deck, which is, you know, what my deck is and what probably most Prosh decks are, it becomes you can get Prosh out and then kill somebody in a turn with, you know, 21 damage.
I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of another card that both creates tokens and sacks the tokens. There might be some. And I'm
at least not as efficiently.
People are
as
surely
Flash.
Going to let me know if I'm wrong about
stuff.
That. But there's few, if there are any, that actually create the tokens and allow you to sacrifice the tokens. You know, that's the power, I think, of Prosh. That's, you know, there's, it's just like you
usually
need two
things. It should be a
two-card
combo,
things.
But it's
and
one
card.
Just those combos by themselves enable so many shenanigans in the game of Magic with other cards. Like, usually you need something that makes a token, something else that sacrifices it, and then another thing that does that like gets an effect when stuff dies or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the fact that you can get two of those in one package,
and
then you always have access to that package because it's your commander, is what makes this, like, he's a really, really powerful
Because there's a lot
commander.
Of cards that are just like, when a creature, it essentially just becomes... There's a lot of cards like when a creature dies or goes to a graveyard, something happens.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a hard, like, that always is like you put it out, you either plan for it and you need another card for it to happen, or you put it as defense for if somebody are going to kill your creatures. What this means, though, is that if you have that card, you have a card that you can cast at any time to activate that ability and activate it to a greater degree every time you play them.
Yeah. Right.
Like, if you have a card that's like every time a creature goes to a graveyard, do 2 damage. It's like, okay, well, great.
Now you only
I can
need
play
Prosh.
Whatever I want. Yeah. Like, I only need Prosh. Like, I don't need any other card.
Yeah. Exactly. Whereas most other token decks, they can only make tokens or they have a card that just sacrifice a creature and it does something. And it's like, it makes it way. Like, that one extra piece is a really big step that you have to go.
Like, any two card combo that's just when a creature goes to a graveyard, something happens, and you have Prosh, like, it's just so immensely powerful because you're going to do that effect whenever you want. And when you do sack with Prosh, Prosh, the commander, becomes more powerful and can theoretically get to the commander damage, a flying commander damage, to just swing and kill somebody.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it can just get really dirty really quickly, especially if you have anger or something that gives you haste and you can do it within the same turn.
Yeah. So the basic idea of Prosh is mana ramp, get him out, and let him die if he needs to, cast him again, and try to win in a single turn.
Yeah.
It's sort of the one thing about Prosh that keeps him a little bit in check is that you can't sack him to himself.
Yeah, that would be absurd.
Yeah, because like Matt said, you actually want him to die because you want to recast him. Because when you recast him, you actually get more
kobolds.
So, you know, you still want sack outlets in the deck. And a lot of times, you know, it's to sack the kobolds for different effects. But it's also because it allows you to sack Prosh.
Yeah.
So you can recast him to make more kobolds.
Yeah. Especially if somebody's going to put him in your deck also. If you want to be able to sack him.
Yeah.
Stop somebody from putting him in your deck.
Not to mention.
Kill your whole deck.
Yeah. You don't want it. Prosh decks are very reliant on him.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to build a Prosh deck that is just going to be. I mean, you could, but then you might as well not use Prosh. Like, Prosh's deck is definitely, like, every card you have in it should essentially be, like, when Prosh comes out, this card wins the game.
Or if Prosh is already out, this card
wins the game. So, you cannot have Prosh go inside your deck, or you've essentially lost the game. Or you just have a lot of tokens.
Yeah.
I think there are ways to build it so you still have a chance.
There's
to
some
win.
Redundancy,
But in general, I'd say Prosh is one of those decks where, like, if you can deal with him specifically... then most of the deck is turned off.
I mean, there are definitely still combos, you know, with even just, like, simple cards like Goblin, what is it, the guy who does damage, and any of the other token creators you have.
Goblin Bombardment. And you're going to have things like Doubling Seas and Parallel Lives. We'll talk about some stuff.
Yeah.
You had a really interesting thing you said before we were recording about how you sort
view.
Of... Yeah, your Prosh's. View and how you sort of came to understand the deck. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just... Because when we did... Like I said, the first time I played Magic, we played EDH, and I forget what the first deck I played was, but then I played the Prosh deck, and during that time, I hadn't played Magic, but I'd been playing Netrunner, and me and Jimmy were playing Race to the Galaxy, and we played a lot of Dominion, and a lot of those European games, Euro games, are definitely, you know, they're very currency-based. They're economic. They're kind of...
You're, like, getting coins every turn.
And it's very much about building your empire and building the and increasing your currency and increasing your, essentially, your engine, your bank, to... So you can get currency faster so you can buy the stuff that you need in order to get stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. And Magic's very different. Like Magic, there's, you know, you can essentially treat a lot of things as currency. Like you've talked about cards being currency. So anytime you use a card, you can't just think of it as the effect. You have to think about that you're more poor the moment you've played the card.
Right.
And mana is definitely the currency, but it's different because everybody
–
In a perfect world of Magic, everybody's essentially playing – a mana every turn, and the game's just ramping up altogether. So you're all equally rich, right?
Right. In theory.
Again, it also doesn't work because there's randomness and people, there's mana ramping and stuff. But, like, Prosh, he was fun, so I knew I wanted to play him, but I didn't really understand the deck at first because I wasn't used to Magic. And kind of when I got interested in him is kind of when it clicked to me when it was like, I have to stop thinking about the creatures. Like, what does Prosh do? Prosh plays these creatures, but they're 0-1 creatures, so they're useless. Like, in my mind, it's like, why are they there then? It's like, wait, don't think of them as creatures. Think of them as money. Like, Prosh is essentially a bank, and then it's like, okay, so what you want to do is find cards that allow you to spend your money. So if you create tokens, if you think about it as money, and it's like just becomes Dominion Eraser for the Galaxy, it's like, oh, I play Prosh, I get $6. What are things I want to do with those dollars? I want to sacrifice. I want to force people to sacrifice lands. I want to cause damage. I want to make people sacrifice creatures. I want to draw more cards so I have a better chance of doing it. You know, I want more mana so I can cast, you know, a Hydra with a huge thing. And then it just becomes. And then it started making sense to me just because it was closer to kind of other games I've played where it's like, oh, crap, okay, well, now I just need economy cards. Mm-hmm. I want burst economy where essentially I get a ton of tokens. Or I want to bounce that out with, you know, a slow growth economy, like a card that every time a creature dies, a token comes out. Or every time a creature dies,
you get one token.
Exactly, like that. Like, those are things that then I'm just steadily getting stuff. And then it just becomes about getting cards that essentially allow me to spend the money I want to spend. Which then just became like, which plays totally differently. Like, I play Kalia, and it's about getting creatures, that's about blocking. Prosh has just become, I need stuff so I can block and just make sure people don't kill me. But at the end of the day, it's just me building my bank and getting the money so that then I can spend it all on a nuclear bomb and kill everybody. You know, it's like, that's what it becomes.
It's really fascinating, and it's such a really cool way to sort of come at it and to sort of retune your brain a little bit and think about it in a different way. And I think that's, like, that should be a really important lesson to people listening, is like, just like, flipping your thought process about how you think about it, and it really helped you build the deck in a certain way, which totally makes sense. Like, yeah, it's such a great way to think about it. I hadn't actually thought about it that way.
I didn't think about it until I thought about it, but like, saying it out loud like that, then when I went back and I just started picking out cards, I'm like, oh, I don't want this card anymore because literally these don't apply to what I was just talking about.
This card isn't actually.
I'm like, this isn't giving
this
me
isn't
money,
making me money, so, and is not spending money.
Yeah, so
I don't want it.
I don't need it. Like, this is a fine card, but it just doesn't work in what my deck's doing, so I don't need it anymore.
Right.
That's actually, I think, a really good just general commander thing, which is like, you know, when you write a school essay, you need to have a thesis statement.
Yeah.
You know, your commander decks. It can have multiple thesis statements, but usually it's going to be tied around a sort of a central idea or theme. And like, being able to locate that and tuning your deck specifically for that is going to give your deck that consistency.
And again, you've talked about it. In any of the podcasts I've heard you guys talk about it, and just in person, it's just like, it's because you have 100 individual cards, well, you know, 60 minus lands. Like, the only way to essentially create any sort of consistency is to have a thesis and then create, while not the identical card, like a redundancy of cards. That's why you might have like Phyrexian Altar and, you know, what's the other
Ashnod's Altar.
Yeah, and then something like Food Chain. Altar. Like, those, they're slightly different, but they all essentially do the same thing. They allow me to spend my tokens to create mana.
Yeah, right. You can spend your money on mana. You can spend it on damage. You can spend it, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, really cool.
So let's talk about some of the cards that help you get this money. So let's talk about abusing tokens, token generation.
That's kind of step one, right? Is making tokens,
make some money. So
there's obviously some super easy like ones that you essentially need in there.
Yeah.
Doubling Season.
Yeah, you want to read that one?
Yeah. So Doubling Season is, if an effect would put one or more tokens onto the battlefield under your control, it put twice that many of those tokens onto the battlefield instead.
And the same
enchantment.
Thing. Yeah, the same
it's
thing
enchantment.
Does
and
for...
also works with count. It's the same thing with counters.
Counters on permanents, about.
And like, counters are, I wouldn't say they're the core of my deck or anything, but because counters often are associated with tokens, like, definitely having cards that do stuff with counters is useful. Never choose a counter card over a token card. But there's a lot of good token generators that also essentially
use counters.
Yeah. Stuff like Beastmaster Ascension and other things will read.
And
there.
Also it helps for Prosh because he's flying. And you know, the faster you can get him up to that 21 damage thing, the better. Like, if you can get him there in a turn,
if that's how you're even trying to kill someone.
Win.
Yeah, exactly.
Doubling Season, there's a Parallel Lives has a similar effect. There's a few cards that do effects like that. You probably want as many of those as you can get because, you know, remember, if you bring Prosh out, even for the first time, he's going to make 6-0-1 Kobolds. If you have Doubling Season out, he makes 12.
12, yeah.
I mean, that's twice as many. It's crazy.
And again, he's
and
17
that's if he
if you
died. You know, and you're spending 8 on him. Yeah. Now you're making 16 of them instead of 8. Like, it's a big difference.
And there's a lot of, like, Phyrexian Altar and Food Chain. There's a lot of cards that give you mana for when you sacrifice. And if you have any other, and, you know, for example, Phyrexian Altar allows you to sacrifice a creature. So if you have Phyrexian Altar out in Doubling Season or Parallel Lives, that 3-card combo is an infinite combo for essentially creating infinite creatures.
Right.
Because you sac Prosh and the creatures. You've made them double. You have enough mana from that
to cast them again. Right.
And you just keep going, and then you know you just say,
you
okay,
just make an arbitrary amount of
everything. You say I pros. Again, we've talked about this. The danger of that is if somebody defeats you there, your pros now costs infinite mana to cast. So
if they
you've
kill
lost
pros right there.
So you need to make sure that you're ready to win. You would do that if you have like Purphorus out or Goblin Sharpshooter or something, so that they essentially
can't
stop it.
Right.
Another big card that you use in this deck is called Mana Echoes, which is another enchantment. We'll find that Prosh is very heavy on enchantments to sort of fuel the bank, essentially. Think of him as his glorified bankers.
Because what do you need? You need mana to continuously recast Prosh.
Yeah.
You don't actually need a ton of stuff that makes tokens on its own because you have access to Prosh.
Prosh is the best token generator you could have. There's not many things that allow you to cast X number of tokens.
Right. You're not going to be usually sitting there going, well, I really wish I had something that made tokens. Because you do. You have your general.
Yeah.
So what you really need is the mana to cast him so that he can make the tokens.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it's even like a Hydra, like I forget the name of the Hydra that casts, you know, X. It's always going to be like
Genesis Hydra.
3 mana X. Like, you will never get anything that is X tokens other than Prosh. Like, it's straight up, how much you cast them is how many tokens you get.
Yeah,
like, you can't get better than that.
Do you want to read Mana Echoes? I'm
sure.
I cut you off.
Yeah, no, that's all right. So it's a 4 mantle, 2/2 red. Whenever a creature comes into play, you may add 1 colorless to your mana pool for each creature you control that shares a creature type with it.
Yeah.
So if you get 6 guys in, I think the math works that it's just you get 36 mana.
Yeah, it's just
6
insane.
Times 6.
And that is a time where actually you may not, because that won't be an infinite, you may not even want to.
It's colorless.
You may not even want to cast Prosh, but then you use that. That's why I will have a few Hydras or a few X damage, you know, do
like
X damage
fireball
to somebody.
Yeah.
It's like, you play that with Prosh. You can play that the first time you play Prosh.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have enough damage to
you
kill somebody.
You make 72 mana and then you
kill
fireball
somebody. It's like it's over.
Two people.
Like we were talking about Rolling Earthquake last episode on the top red cards.
What was that new? There's that new rare that I was talking about that I don't know why it's not expensive because it's definitely going to become super common in modern. It's the
Freighter's
new lightning.
Claws.
Yeah, claws. It's just X.
Rolling
2
Earthquake
damage.
Though hits all players.
Yeah. Obviously for a commander, that's
so you
more
just
powerful.
Go boom,
boom. Yeah. Guess
kill
what,
you
guys?
All.
Hey, the ground's
wait,
shaking.
Does Rolling Earthquake apply to you also? Does it hurt you?
Each creature, and without oh, that's right. Actually, it does hit yourself as well.
Yeah. But
yeah. So if you're number one, if you're first in life, you can use it and kill everybody.
Yeah.
Or you can just be like, I kill everybody, including myself. And again, as we just talked about,
yeah,
it's just
that'd
fun.
Be hilarious. Yeah.
A lot of times too,
for some reason you have horsemanship, which is not gonna happen.
A lot of times though, you have something like Goblin Bombardment out. We talked about it last episode, which is you can sacrifice a creature and it deals 1 damage to target creature or player.
Yeah, which is absurd.
So you can just do 39 to everybody, sacrifice 4 creatures, do 1 to everybody
and
else, and you're at 1, everybody is dead. Like, you can find those last couple points of damage.
Yeah,
you're in
not
red.
Hard. Yeah.
Yeah. So Rolling Earthquake, really good because of the amount of mana you can generate so quickly. With
Prosh. That just came out of Annihilation, so I'm definitely dropping that card in.
Yeah, and before, like, a couple months ago, the thing was nearly impossible to get because it was Portal Three Kingdoms. And now, like,
it's
from the
Vault
of Annihilation, you can find it really easy. And From the Vault of Annihilation it's pretty much selling at MSRP right now, which is great.
I got it for $45.
They should have called it From the Vault Commander, as far as I'm
concerned. Yeah, it's totally for Commander players. If you haven't gone and checked it out, I would definitely look at getting that because board wipes are just such a pillar of the format.
And our good friend Gavin
Bearhead
designed
it. There's like 3 cards I'm putting in Prosh and there's 2 I'm putting in Kalia. Like, it's too good.
Gavin Bearhead, our buddy, designed it. So thank you, Gavin.
Awesome. Yeah,
all Commander
great.
Players should be thanking you.
Yeah, definitely.
And what's fun is like, I mean, what's the one that's just like straight up destroy all creatures? Wrath.
Wrath of God.
Wrath of God,
But like, what was fun is like all the other ones, like a lot of them have like just fun effects. Like, again, the one I really like is the X damage, and then you put out that many 1/1 creatures, and it's more than 5, you destroy all the other creatures.
Yeah.
And that's just fun because it's like you do board wipe. But you get
a
bunch of 1/1s,
guys left,
and then there are ways to make that more powerful. Like we talked about, if you have another card I use, if you have Coat of Arms out, when you do that, then
Marshall,
it's like you have 5 or 6 6/6 5/5 creatures out after you board wipe. That's a pretty good position to be in.
I would say that of the times I lose to the Prosh deck, which is fairly often because you play it and Eli plays it, Coat of Arms is probably the most common scenario for the win condition. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, Coat of Arms is devastating if you get it out. So each creature gets +1/+1 for each other creature on the battlefield that shares at least 1 creature type with it. So what that essentially means is if you have this out and you put Prosh out, instead of 6 0/1s, you have 6 6/7s.
Right.
Which is devastating. And if you have Anger or anything that gives, or Hammer,
a Purphoros
Hammer that gives your guys haste. somebody's dead that turn. Like,
you,
almost
a lot
certainly.
Of times you kill everybody. Like, I've seen it happen where you play Prosh for about 12.
Yeah.
Now they're all 12, 13s.
Yeah, it's like,
and there's
12
of them, and you go, well, I'll attack each of you with four of them.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody just dead.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's a perfect one where you can do, and again, what's great about that is you can absolutely do a board wipe.
And
it
then,
won't destroy the artifact. Do a board wipe, play your artifact, you play Prosh. Everybody essentially has no creatures. They don't have enough blockers out. Everybody gets one turn
to try.
Even if you don't have haste now, everybody gets one turn. Either they have a board wipe, or they're just, all they're doing is trying to get enough blockers out, or begging you not to kill them, and then it becomes a social part of the game.
Yeah.
Where it's like, all right, Matt, I'm going to do this to make sure that he can't block you. It's like, enjoy it. Like, everybody's dead next turn, essentially.
Yeah. Matt, one card that I think you might want to potentially consider putting in, I found it today. It's called Furystoke Giant.
Eli was showing me that one. Read it again.
Yeah, it's a 3/2 red for a 3/3 creature. When Furystoke Giant comes into play, other creatures you control gain. Tap this. This creature deals 2 damage to target creature or player until end of turn. And it has persist, so when he dies, he comes back and you get to do it again.
Yeah, so you can tap creatures to do damage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another. That's actually a recent one that I started, a recent thing I started realizing that I should do with them. And I
is find something that gives all your stuff tap abilities.
Yeah, because you can tap them even though they have summoning sickness, right?
Depends on the card.
It depends on the card. But
the
ones
one
that
you're thinking about, I think you were looking for, is called Earthcraft.
Yep, there we go.
Yeah, and this one, it's an enchantment. It costs 1 and a green, and it says tap an untapped creature you control, untap target basic land. So it basically turns all your dudes into like Voyaging Satyrs.
Yeah,
which
there's a lot of times with Prosh, you're usually using all your mana with Prosh because you're.
Yeah.
You essentially ramped your mana with the amount of times you cast Prosh.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes, anything that can give you the ability to get mana instantly after you've cast Prosh, you want that. Because usually, when you cast Prosh, it's like you need that one other card. There's two things that happen. You have one other card to win the game.
Right.
And either you have to somehow survive the next turn.
Or you have to play it right now.
Or you have to play it right now. And the only way you can play it right now is doing mana ones.
Yeah, the thing about Earthcraft is there's two types of cards that give tap abilities. And if they say target creature gains this ability, tap it and do X, that means you can't do it if you have summoning sickness.
But if the card
says tap an untapped creature you control, then that's like a downside of the card, kind of. And so it's like the enchantment Earthcraft is tapping the creature.
Not to mention, like, with the Prosh deck, you don't give a crap if your creatures are tapped.
Well, that's exactly. So
right?
That's the,
like, that's not.
So
like,
if you think about money, it's just making your money more efficient because.
Use
when
it
you
twice.
Put, exactly. Yeah. Anything you so then that becomes the next level of the Prosh deck is like at first, like, oh, I got creatures. I want to use them and sacrifice them so I can get Prosh strong. And then it's like, wait, not only that, I should use it so that when I sacrifice creatures, other stuff happens.
Yeah.
Then you get to the next level, it's like, wait, I want to get it so that I can do something with them before I even sacrifice them.
So now I bring them in, tap them for something, then sacrifice them.
Yeah, it's like I bring
them
in, and that does something when creatures appear or when they die. Then I'm going to tap them to give me mana, let me draw cards, whatever it is. Then I'm going to sack them and do damage with something and make Prosh strong. Like, it's all about if you can get your little 0/1, it's about essentially making these little 0/1 tokens.
It's great too.
Doing as many things as possible.
Because the art for the Kobolds of Karaki is just this miserable painting of
and I think there's something just really funny about that where it's like in a way it's like you look at the cards like, oh, he puts out 0/1 guys, like,
yeah,
that's
what are they
stupid
gonna do?
Like they you put out the weakest things you could possibly put in the game, you essentially put these 0/1 blockers, like, but if you can find ways to tap them, sacrifice them, and have cards that do things when things are going to a graveyard, there's nothing better than if you put out, and then if you have the best card, which is Prophoros out, it's come in, damage happens, tap them, you do something, sacrifice them, something happens, and process strong. It's like that one thing, you know, five things happen from just the token coming
out. I mean, normally, let's be honest, with Purphoros out, you don't have to do any of the rest of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's
just
over.
Let me read Purphoros real quick. Oh, crap, this one's in Korean.
That's great.
Okay, let me just remember what Purphoros says. He's 3 and a red. He is a legendary, indestructible enchantment
god. He's hard to get rid of.
He's a 6/5. That doesn't matter at all.
Actually,
the only text that matter is that when a creature enters the battlefield under your control, do 2 damage to each opponent.
To each opponent.
Each opponent.
So that becomes just, you save, that's just when it's become so devastating to be a few turns into commander. If anybody's done damage to you, it's like you put Prosh out, and bare minimum, you're doing 12 damage to everybody.
Everyone.
And it becomes super, I mean, again, you have doubling season out, 24 damage right away. And again, it's not hard. You have Goblin out. You have anything that does any other damage with it. It just becomes pretty much, I mean, I know it. Every time I put it out, you guys just like sigh, because unless you can get rid of it within a turn or two, you're pretty much lost.
Yeah, we're all
put
be
out because
down the notch.
If you're playing Prosh and Purphoros hits the table on your side, like, you're pretty much going to win the next turn.
You have to, because everybody's going to attack you.
And you'd better.
Yeah, because everybody's like, well, we're all dead. And that's what you do. You play him when it's time that guaranteed. And preferably you play him where that turn you'll win.
Yeah. Yeah.
You play him, you play Proj, you have something that doubles it, or you have something that also is doing damage when those creatures die. Like, again, if you have that, or if you have that, and what's the guy that anytime a creature dies, he does damage?
Blood Artist.
Of it, yeah. It's like something like that when he comes out, it's, you know, it's just devastating.
Yes. There's another great card like Sadistic Hypnotist, which is also important, or cards that. Because sometimes if someone counters Prosh, you're just left with the tokens. Because it's not when Prosh enters the battlefield, it's when you cast him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you won't have Prosh, you're like, darn it, I don't have a Sacrifice Outlet. So it's important for this deck to have the redundancy in Sacrifice Outlets on creatures and artifacts. Like Sadistic Hypnotist, you can sacrifice a creature, target player discards two cards.
Like, whoa, wait, me. I don't have that card. What is that?
It's an uncommon. It's from...
That sounds devastating.
Dual decks, yeah.
Guys.
And you can only do
it... They discard two cards?
Yeah, you can only do it when you would cast a sorcery, but it's going to be your turn anyway. Yeah,
no,
you can...
Yeah,
with one cast of Prosh, you could make the entire table discard 12 cards across everyone's
hands. So you'd have... Dude, I'm so happy right now. What is that card called?
Sadistic Hypnotist.
No, I'm not happy. This is gonna be,
that's an incredible
this is
card.
Suck when it happens
that,
to
yeah,
me.
That sounds
terrible. Thanks a lot, Jimmy.
That's like almost
that's what
the
I'm
worst.
Here for, guys.
Just making everybody discard all their cards is devastating.
I'd rather just die.
Yeah, I mean, that's like... Because that's one of the things that definitely... there's a lot of your guys' decks that's like... Because it's hard to get card... Like, the best... Like, you get Skull Clamp and a few others that give you card draw.
Yeah.
But, like... Again, Prosh is... I wouldn't say he's a one-trick pony, but, like, you kind of essentially... It's about getting your... You essentially have to set up the ability to do a big burst of damage, right?
Right, yeah.
They're not countering. You're not doing anything tricky. You're not, like, doing stuff like that. But, like, you know, I forget the deck of yours that was, like, every time you essentially are bouncing and untapping creatures and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Like... Being able to make you discard your cards would literally be the most powerful thing to me. Like,
yeah,
I need to do that because there's about 90% chance that when I'm going to play the thing to kill you, you have the counter for it. You're going to make me bounce Prosh. You're going to make me bounce, like,
right,
my counters.
Right, but you just get rid of all the cards out of their hand. What
yeah,
they,
it's like,
they got nothing to counter.
Very few decks are able, like, Glenn's, like, Dredge deck might be able to make use of that.
Yeah.
But honestly, yeah, that's a very powerful ability.
I think, too, like... This deck needs more sac outlets than your normal token deck, and it can afford them because it doesn't need as many token generators. But you also, like I said, you want to be able to sac Prosh himself.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be these turns where you play him, and then you make a bunch of tokens, and then it's like if Purphoros is out, and you're just thinking, man, if I could just kill him and recast him, I'll just win.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you need a way to kill him.
Yep.
You know, and so...
That's why cards
it's useful, and when we talk about diplomacy, like... Again, you want to cast Prosh as much as possible. At the same time, if you're setting up that big play, like let's say you know you have Prophers out and you're going to essentially do, you know you're going to do like 18 damage. Nobody's quite at 18 damage.
Mm-hmm.
You want another sack outlet so that maybe you use Goblin Sharpshooter just to hit everybody like six times.
Get him
down
with
Don't
range.
Use Prosh that turn because everybody's not going to attack you. You're not playing your nuclear bomb yet.
Right.
Everybody thinks like, oh, he doesn't have anything else out, so he's just doing this. So that then it's like, okay, good. I got everybody where I need to. Now I can play... Not my most powerful Prosh turn, but just enough to kill everybody.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so sack out, and it's, again, since essentially all your cards are based off Prosh versus sack outlet, if you have another sack outlet, it just means that you're more likely to be able to use your abilities without having Prosh out.
You can also sack in response to someone trying to, like, Chaos Warp and put them back in your deck or something.
Yeah,
so
exactly. We were talking about that. The best way to get rid of Prosh, best way to be a Prosh deck is to get Prosh in the deck.
Yeah.
Tuck him.
So you want a sack outlet to stop people from doing that.
Yeah. And a great card that I also saw is one that gets you growth from it. So, like, Disciple of Bolas, when he enters the battlefield, you sacrifice another creature. You gain X life and draw X cards, where X is the creature's power.
Mm-hmm.
So you could change something up where you're sacking all his little dudes to Prosh or whatever.
Well, they need something,
huge...
right, because their power is zero?
No. Well, I'm saying you can make Prosh huge, play Disciple of Bolas,
and then
have Prosh swing at someone and then play it
and then
sack kill
him
Prosh
and, then
and you gain 17
cards.
You know, 17
whatever,
cards,
yeah.
So as long as you can find, like it's just like you're in this crazy, like, contraption where you have all these different levers. You're like Inspector Gadget, and all your guys, you want them to be able to do the different things, whether it's a killing a creature, killing players, getting rid of threats, getting rid of like artifacts or enchantments or whatever. And the more effectiveness you can use out of all of them, the more toolbox you can make your deck, the stronger it is.
Yeah, you're really not. And it's one of the things that you kept, like, when I was playing, Josh, you keep reiterating, it got to a point where it's like, I'd have these strong creatures, but it's like, other than maybe one or two Hydras that are like really fun to. If you're going to have the big mana, like suddenly you have mana echoes and you're going to have like 40 mana, it can be fun to play one of those guys and that can win the game. Like, Prosh, you're really not playing creatures. Like, and it just becomes a kind of a totally different game. You're not playing creatures and you're not playing counters. You're really just trying to get the engine going that when Prosh is played, it's dead. Because you have all the blockers you need. You don't need to play creatures for blockers. You just put out guys that are, and your commander's flying. So even if you need a flying blocker, you'll essentially
and
always
you want
have
him
one.
To die.
And you want him to die, yeah, so you totally are cool with blocking with him. So there's really no reason for creatures, and you're not going to counter because you don't. It's not worth the redundancy. You don't want to lose any redundancy in your deck of just damage when tokens come out, hurting people when tokens come out.
It's spending your money, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't want to create all these things where, like, now my currency's not actually. I can't spend it.
Yeah, it's like now I need to keep it out here because it's whatever, or I need to spend it to counter a thing. It's like I want every card I have in my Prosh deck to essentially create money and then allow me to use it to kill you.
Right. Let's talk about some cards you may not think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, one I've got, and it's fairly new, is the Hooded Hydra.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the new Hydra?
Yeah, that's from Cons. It's a mythic. It costs...
I'll read it out.
Please read it for me, Jimmy.
How much does it cost?
Hooded Hydra is X green for a 0/0 creature, and he enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters on it. And when he
which could be doubled if you've got doubling season
exactly.
out.
And when he dies, you put a 1/1 green snake creature token on the battlefield for each +1/+1 counter on it. So
which could be doubled if you have doubling season out.
Exactly.
That's so the thing with doubling season out. It doubles twice.
Yeah. So you could pay five X in this case, and you'd be a 5/5 with 5 +1/+1 counters on it. He would die, or no, they would come in as 10.
If you had
and
doubling season,
when
yep.
he
yep.
dies, they come in as 20.
Right.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, and that's just...
And that's just a modest amount.
Yeah, exactly. For, yeah. for
the Prosh deck
especially.
Can make... it can sort of burst make a ton of mana, too. So like we were talking about, if Mana Echoes or something is out and you make 72 mana, you can bring him out as a 72-72. If you got doubling season out, he's a 144-144. Yeah. And then when he dies, you know, they have to kill that thing.
Yeah.
It's a 72-72.
Yeah.
And it's when they do wipe the board or something, then, you know, you get... 288 tokens or whatever, depending on if you've got Parallel Lives out or something
else.
Like, yeah, he just works with the other cards you've already got going. And then you've got all these tokens, and a lot of times if you have 288 tokens, you can just win.
Yeah. Because
if you have Goblin Bombardment out,
done.
Yep.
You just sack them all and do one damage to everybody, 288 damage total, like, you can kill the whole table. Or if you have Purphoros out, you can sack your own Hooded Hydra and make 288 dudes come in, and everybody takes...
For
566.
So that brings me to another card that I like.
576.
We're doing
Am I right? Am I right? 288 plus 288.
You're
576.
Correct.
One of the cards that
Asians
I never
through.
Thought would be Ba-ding. Like the most powerful, but I've won with it a surprisingly number of times, which also gets to Prosh is essentially the most consistent sack outlet you could ever have. Because
right.
Yeah.
Are there how many other command like even other commanders that usually have sacrifice? That's like Jared or whoever.
Jurad, yeah, you have
it
to pay
mana
for it.
Yeah, it's like there are not many that you can just instantly do. So things, so cards that are like controlling other people's player, other players' cards become even more powerful because you're always gonna be able to use their cards and then sack them.
Yeah,
and then if you're gonna do mana to essentially create powerful creatures, a card that ends up being incredibly powerful is Stalking Vengeance, which is whenever another creature you control dies, it deals damage equal to its power to target player.
Oh, yeah.
So it's gotten a point where, like, I've had... There's one game where I had... I forget the Hydra that's just, like... Oh, the Hydra that doubles every turn. The counter... It starts with X number of counters and it doubles every turn.
Colonian.
Colonian.
And then, of course,
Hydra,
you have doubling season. It's
from
absurd.
M14. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a game where I had him... He was frozen. Somebody detained him.
But he's still.
But then at some point, it's like you can kill him, or if he dies, eventually they detain him. Then they get to the point, it's like, okay, we're going to kill him now. And it's like, okay, well, stalking this guy's out. It's like, or I sack him,
if
and all of a sudden.
If you kill him, you all die.
Yeah, you all die.
Yeah.
So, or again, it's like you just get enough people that's like, they can't kill your people either because if they kill them, they essentially have to attack Stalking Vengeance because otherwise anything they do
they have
is
to
just going to kill them.
Card
back.
Off the right. table, yeah.
We talked about a card last week. We've talked about it a few times on the show. It's sort of one of those flagship EDH cards, Insurrection.
Which is
steal everybody's creatures, and then you get them until end of turn.
Especially if you
and
have
then you have
sack
to give
outlets.
Them back at end of turn. But Prosh, your general is a sack outlet.
Yeah.
So it's more powerful even than it would normally be.
Unless they counter it, you've won the game. Like
most of the time.
Yeah,
I mean, there's
a way, but it would be incredibly hard. Even if somebody sacrifices their creatures, unless, like, if you're playing a 4-person game, 5-person game, you're going to get enough creatures to essentially hit everybody, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's true.
Everything.
I mean, there's decks that have Ghostly Prisons,
yeah,
and they've got Crawl Space, and or they've got, like, no creatures at all. Like, it's not always going to win, but it's incredibly powerful in this deck because even if not, you still take all their stuff and kill it because you sack it to Prosh.
Yeah.
So if that's the worst case scenario, I kill all creatures on the battlefield except mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you can't attack with them, that's pretty good.
Yep. Yeah. Right. I would play a card that says for 8 mana, take everyone's creatures, kill them.
Yeah.
That'd be fine. It'd be pretty good, man. That's not bad. Not bad.
That would it would be a board
one-sided board wipe.
One-sided board
wipe.
Yeah.
Rare. Like it'd be like kill everybody else's creature.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's where that card becomes.
There are cards like that. In Garruk's Wake does that.
Right.
Kill all creatures and planeswalkers you don't control. But In Garruk's Wake doesn't also have the clause and sometimes just win the game.
And sometimes just also attack with them before you
because
do
Insurrection,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The best case scenario for Insurrection is like you said. I'm free to attack everybody with all the creatures I just took and kill all of you. So.
And sack them for mana to Phyrexian Altar.
And you don't have the ability
to
block them because you have no creatures.
I took your creatures,
Yeah.
I took your blockers and I'm hitting you in the face with them now.
Yeah.
The fun of EDH is essentially there is almost nothing except for the broken infinite combos. Everything can essentially be countered by something. And if you're playing with enough people, their decks do a crazy thing. But it's fun to essentially get as many of those possibilities as possible. Like, yeah, I mean, Insurrection, it's pretty dirty.
Yeah. Another card I really like is Reaper of the Wilds. It's 4 mana total for a 4/5 creature, Gorgon. And it just, the importance is whenever another creature dies, scry one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think scry is really underrated when it comes to just
well, especially EDH, because again, EDH, as we're talking about, you have very little consistency in your deck. Like anything that can make you consistent or tutoring effects or anything that can get you that card that you need to get that combo is super important.
Yeah, especially if you're looking for
a lot of times, like
card.
All you need is Purphoros, you're going to win, right?
Yeah,
so like just getting Purphoros. So
the sooner I get it, the better.
And in this deck, you're playing black, so you either just scry until you hit a tutor or you scry until you hit Purphoros himself, and then you know you can win. Yeah, and since you're going to sack like 20 kobolds, you're just going to scry 20 times.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty mean. Let's talk about some trap cards, some cards that maybe aren't as good in this deck. This happened the other night, actually. Eli and I were talking, and we had drafted, and he had pulled a Nissa.
Mm-hmm.
And Nissa Worldwaker from the new M15 set. I'm just going to paraphrase. She turns your lands one at a time into 4/4 creatures. She untaps up to 4 forests. And then when you ultimate her, she turns all your lands into 4 forests. You're not going to ultimate her very much. Oh, she's She's only got three.
She's only got three. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's great.
She's awesome. So he pulls her in the draft.
Yeah.
And he immediately takes out his Prosh deck and he starts going through it, figuring out what he's going to take out to add her in. And I'm going.
Yeah, you wouldn't put because
what she do? Yeah. What she do that your deck needs? She's a really good card.
Yeah, for sure.
She's a really strong card.
Yeah.
But this is something I see a lot in people making EDH decks, which is like a bunch of good cards. That's going to be fine. You know, your deck's not going to be bad, but it's not going to be really great either.
Yeah.
You know, you want every card to work with every other card in your deck to give yourself the best chance at, like, having the most powerful deck. And, so that to me just brought up, like, that's kind of that kind of card.
Well, the thing with that is, like, if you think about, as we talk about, each token's essentially currency for Prosh.
Right.
It's pretty expensive currency because they were lands.
Right.
So, and the main thing with Prosh is to sack them to do something.
Right.
So you don't want to sack them. And at the end of the day, them being four
she doesn't
fours,
allow you to spend them.
She can't. She doesn't. Yeah, you can't. She doesn't let you do anything with them. She just creates money. She doesn't let you do anything with the money. She just creates it. 4/4/0/1. It's all the same. Unless Stalking Vengeance. Whatever the token is, it's essentially the same in a Prosh deck. It doesn't matter if it's a 100/100 token or a 0/1 token. At the end of the day, you're usually sacking it or doing something with it to do something else. So them being 4/4s doesn't matter. And then you're sacrificing lands to create them. So it's really expensive money for your Prosh deck. But as you said, it's a great card. Like, totally using other stuff. But, like,
it just doesn't fit in.
You might as well just use a creature. Like, if there's a guy who just, when he dies, creates 3 tokens. Like, even that's better. Like, you put him out, you sack him to do something, he gives you then 3 more things to do it with. Like, that's, you know, it's a one-time play. You play it, and, you know, not only that, but he also doesn't piss people off. You play her, some people might get scared of you and go after you.
True. Planeswalkers have a weird
It doesn't matter. They don't have to be good. Somebody puts a planeswalker down, like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Like, why do you play that?
I'm going to kill you. Also, you might plus them a couple times, and as soon as you get near ultimately,
everybody attacks you.
Everyone attacks you. So what you're doing is you're making everybody attack you.
Guaranteed at a certain point.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. Like, some planeswalkers aren't great, but essentially most planeswalkers, I mean, obviously there are some that are bad, but the ultimates are all really good usually. Uh-huh. So at a certain point, somebody's going to have to come after you because at a certain point, you're going to get close to that ultimate and nobody can let that happen. So a planeswalker is just a guaranteed I'm going to.
I mean, unless you're building your deck around them. Like, I think just putting a planeswalker in your deck for a value is just generally not a great idea.
Yeah, like I have And I thought about taking it out, and I made those. She is good. Like, I have Chandra in here. It's mostly because it was the first Planeswalker I pulled. But
wait, no, you have the cool black one.
Yeah. Well, now the cool black one now, Comic-Con. So I don't want to take him out.
The one that we waited in line all night for.
Yeah. The thing with Chandra is that the two things that are useful is that she allows you to scry. And she, well, even more than scry, she can essentially play the card or destroy it, which is totally useful. Like it's
card draw.
And for Prosh, that's super good. And then the one other thing it does is that it does one damage and stops blocking.
Yeah, creature from blocking.
Which for it's not the most normal win condition with Prosh, but again, you can't underestimate how easy it is to get Prosh to 21 damage.
Yeah,
like it can happen.
Like, they've only got
instantly.
One flyer. So.
And and the fact that it's flying. If she wasn't flying, it wouldn't be useful. But since it's flying, most people have one or two flyers out to block you. So if you have the ability to stop them from blocking you, I mean, it's, again, definitely have won the game by multiple times by just having Prosh swing for 21. And that's the same reason to have, I forget, there's another card I have that, it's one of the dragons that also does tokens, but then it also, you can spend one mana to attack one damage and then stop it from blocking.
Yeah.
Like, totally a valid way to win with Prosh.
Was that Forge Stoker?
Yeah,
it's Forge Stoker. I have that in my Kalia deck to ensure that she does not get murdered when she attacks.
That's totally useful for Kalia deck.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean that's the thing, but you're right. Like, it's a great card, and it's some. But yeah, like you kind of have to weigh. Like, is that card really gonna be the more effective than something like Shared Animosity, which makes other guys slightly bigger or whatever?
And that's the other way to compare. It's like there are. I guarantee you, and I'm sure if people do this sort of thing and respond to it, I'm sure there are things that do things that Chandra does that are probably better. But because it's EDH. Chandra's a cool card. I like her. It's a Planeswalker. I don't have many
Plus,
other
she's
Planeswalker.
All black, like,
she's all black and cool.
Yeah.
And if you do get the and if you do get her ultimate, it's essentially I've used her ultimate twice. Both times I've used her ultimate, I've won the game. Like, it's you will win. Like, obviously you may not, but if you with your Prosh deck, you will win the game. Like, if you pull your 10, if you pull 10 cards and you can do something three times. It's
you'll win.
You'll win. Yeah, you're gonna do something that
you only
just
need to insurrection one time, dude. Don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, let's talk about stuff that when is a good to combat this deck. So when you're playing Prosh, like, what do people do when you're like, oh, crap?
Kill your enchantments.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like it's tough because you're not playing creatures and you're not. So in some ways you're not the threat in that you're not attacking people
and you're also not interacting with the board.
But
you are building.
You do start looking big in a different way. Like, in order, the hard part about Prosh is you have to kind of do all the things to win the game as quickly as possible because you will become the priority. Like, you're right. Everybody may only have like three or four kill enchantment cards in their deck, but if you put out Doubling Season, that is the card.
People,
not only that, but if when I play Prosh, I see you guys not kill other people's enchantments, even though they're really strong enchantments. Because if Doubling Season comes out, I win the game if you guys don't kill it. Like, if I put it out, that means next turn
something crazy is gonna happen.
Because it's very rarely can I put out Doubling Season and everything I need unless we're like
it's
on
expensive.
Turn, unless we're on like turn 20, like unless it's like a long game of EDH. So I put out Doubling Season, and all I do is just hope that I did it at a time where you guys don't have a kill enchantment or something else is more powerful out there. Because if I put out Doubling Season, it means next turn. I win. Unless, again, obviously,
unless
there's always
counters
counter,
or whatever.
But it's set up to win. So, and the thing is, most of the cards in your Prosh deck that win the game are clearly identifiable. You're going to win the game. So,
well, because Prosh.
Coat of Arms, Doubling Season, like.
Perforos,
Goblin, Sharpshooter. Like, these are all things that when they're out there.
You have to play them prior to playing Prosh because they don't work otherwise. And so everybody can see Prosh because he's your general. So it's hard to obfuscate the move, right?
Yeah.
You're going to play out one of these things. And then we know the next step is Prosh. I'm looking at him. He's in your command zone. So that's sort of the tricky part to playing him is finding those spots where, like, I think I'm going to, if I play Doubling Season now, it won't get killed.
Yeah.
And that can mean like looking at a time when, oh, those two guys are really going at each other.
Yeah.
So they're not even going to have time to turn around and kill this. And that leaves me, you know, in a good spot now to play it. So it's kind of, that's the real art to playing this deck.
And the idea is that, obviously, the idea is that you have enough redundancy that, you know, you play Doubling Season, they kill it. Well, good. You know, you play Parallel Lives next turn.
Mm-hmm.
Or you play something and they use, you know, a board wipe. Well, you have Coat of Arms. Like, the idea is that you want to essentially essentially outpace their ability to destroy you, but it doesn't always happen.
You just got
to
stick one, too. So it's like, yeah, you just got to stick season. One. Okay, coat of arms.
But because
okay,
that's the way you play it.
That one stayed. Boom.
But because that's the way you play it, you don't really have the ability. The hard thing with Prosh is you don't really have the ability to really stop other people from winning, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
If
well, you're not
if you break
deck.
My engine, I'm not going anywhere, and I don't have any way to stop you. Like, there's other, like, you got, like, you know, if you play your bounce card or something, like, I can screw you up, but, like, you still have the ability to stall the game. You can essentially protect yourself, and, like, you have creatures and block. Like, for me, it's like, if my plan was doubling season and Purphoros, and you kill doubling season, and then you're, like, I'm never going to get enough out, it's like, it's very hard for me to come back. Like, it's the engine's broken, unless I pull the other set, but by then, you guys could win, you know. So
it's why Purphoros is the key card in the deck and the most powerful card in the deck is because it's indestructible. And
yeah, it's super hard to get rid of.
So you can usually just play it out the turn before you're going to win.
Yeah,
and not you're usually Purphoros is going to live that one rotation of the table because they have to have specifically exile enchantment.
Yeah,
which just there isn't much. They may have one or two in their deck, but to there's just a low chance they have it in their hand.
Yeah, now, and they would literally only put it in their
destroy enchantment,
for you.
A lot more prevalent. Yeah, or destroy permanent, a lot more prevalent. Yeah. But they need exile permanent or exile enchantment.
Which I think I had a card in here originally, and looking at the cards I'm looking at getting rid of, there are cards that protect enchantments, and it may be worth it. But again, it's like if that's the key of the Prosh deck is that almost every card you have, you want it to essentially do double. You want to do multiple things.
Right.
So it's hard to just have a card to protect your doubling season because you're essentially trying to set up a three-card combo
now. I would put in something like Regrowth or something that gets something back from your graveyard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for cheap because that can get back doubling season or it can get back something, you know, coat of arms or it can get back something like that. So that would be sort of like almost like a tutor.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Another thing I think that when I'm playing against Prosh is like I'm always holding a board wipe and preferably an instant board wipe.
Yeah.
Because it's just like you just don't have a lot of time to answer it when it's gonna go off. Like if everything lands, like you're gonna die.
Yeah, unless you board wipe it.
Yeah. And sometimes if Goblin Bombardment's out, you might still lose. But if it's the coat of arms plan, then a board wipe can save you.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a Purphoros plan, board wipe won't help you necessarily. But, you know, the board wipe still, it hurts a lot of what the deck's trying to do.
The big thing, as you said, the ultimate weakness of the Prosh deck is that you know the deck, almost certainly the deck, I mean, unless you just decide to make a strong black, green, red deck, like, the deck is based around Prosh, which then is a direct weakness. Like, whether it's countering him when he comes out and it's the wrong time. And, like, yeah, you get those guys out, but sometimes you need it. So most of the time when you put him out, Prosh is your sack outlet.
Right, yeah.
Or you put him inside the deck, you're essentially screwed. Like, because there's definitely been times
Tuck
where...
Yeah, Tuck effects is another way I definitely...
Yeah,
although you're in black, you know, you're
tutor,
in Twitter,
you can always do it. But the thing with EDH is that you get to a point where it's always kind of like who's going to get their win condition first.
Mm-hmm. It's a race,
so if you stall... And stopping Prosh by just countering something is not the hardest thing. So if you stall me that turn or you stop, you know, you get rid of the one, like, it'll probably be two or three turns before my next one.
Right.
And by then it's like most of the time if somebody stopped my big play, because Prosh is, again, it's kind of like an engine. You're kind of building to that moment, and it's usually the moment. And if you stop that moment, it's, you know, I have to hope that the next two cards are like the next kind of engine. Like most of the time you beat me by destroying my engine, which means I have to rebuild it. Like you destroyed doubling season.
And if you delay somebody four turns in EDH, you're probably
lost.
Somebody else is going to win.
Especially at that point. Yeah. So this is a volatile deck. It's a very hard one to beat if you're not prepared for it. Especially if you don't know what's coming, it's very easy to just lose in the flash to it. So I really like Prosh. I think he's one of the best designed commander cards as a commander.
Yeah, because he definitely has weaknesses.
He's got weaknesses.
But what it is that he wins in the fun way, because again, the first time I saw him was that Craig played him.
Yeah.
And like, I'd only played Magic, like, it was the same night, so it was like two rounds, and like, that being my first game, because I was like, wait, Magic always has like 95 creatures coming out. it was just like I was seeing. I was like, how does that happen? Like, that guy's just pulling so much stuff out that it's volatile and it's exciting and it you know, it definitely plays big and fun, and you never win in a boring way is kind of what's cool. Like, maybe Purphoros is the most because it's like, hey guys, you all got damage, but most of the time it's like 96 dudes come out and I sack them all and damage happens and you all lose all your cards or something, and it's cool. And it's fast. Like, for me, like, a lot of the, like, you have that one deck. Like, I guess my alternate thing is, like, I just don't like slow EDH games. So, like, you have that one game that, like, again, it's that deck that's just all bouncing. It's just, it's a slow,
it's
a
about
slow
value.
Death.
It's about incremental value.
Yeah, incremental value,
It's like, you're going to win 100%,
Josh,
but it's going
to
take you 20 turns because you're just going to slowly stall anybody from doing everything while you just slowly search for those six creatures that will kill while all your cards are just bouncing and stopping everybody from doing every single thing in their thing. And it's like, whereas for me, it's like, I'm going to beat you turn six or you won. You know, it's like, and it's like to me, like, that's fun. It means that, you know, there are definitely probably more consistent decks than him.
Well, I'd classify Prosh under the glass cannon archetype.
Yeah.
Sort of like Animara, where
I think you can build him, though. There are so many sacrifice outlets out there.
Oh, yeah.
And even,
oh, I'm sure you
even,
could, I'm
even
sure
going
there's
through
more
your
efficient,
deck,
better ones.
No, even going through your deck, there's ones that destroy enchantments and destroy creatures and whatever. And so you can use your currency to do the things you need to.
Yeah, we talked about win conditions, but again, since we were talking about currency, like, I make sure I have stuff that can destroy artifacts, destroy enchantments.
You can draw cards.
Draw cards, yeah, destroy lands.
Destroy creatures.
Yeah, you're
so there's a toolbox aspect
toolbox
to it. Yeah, so I think that's, you know, something that's underrated about the Prosh deck is it does have answers to a lot of this stuff, you know, because you're using your currency, you're using your kobolds to pay to a sac outlet to have a diverse amount of effects.
Yeah.
So you do have some ability to control the board a little bit.
Yeah.
And
yeah, there's that one, the Quagmire or whatever guy. It's like it's one black mana, maybe it's one black mana, one colorless. Sacrifice a creature, destroy enchantment. Like,
yeah,
that's really powerful. It's like destroying multiple enchantments in a turn is pretty rare and hard. So it's like,
yeah, exactly.
You don't want to sacrifice good creatures. So just to be able to sacrifice a 0/1 guy and do like three of them to destroy like three enchantments on a table. Like, that's killer. Like, that's about as good as it can be.
Yeah. Well, and one of the best cards against this deck, and any deck that relies super heavily on their commander, is Nevermore, which is an enchantment that says name a card and it can't be played.
Yeah, or Meddling Mage.
Yeah, Meddling Mage, I think, is weaker because it's a
creature.
And the deck has a lot of ways. Most decks have a lot of ways to deal with
creatures. Yeah.
But a lot of decks just only have a few ways to deal with killing enchantments, so you want to make sure to put those in there, because if anybody plays a Nevermore on you...
Yeah, I've never seen Evermore played on me. If I did, I'd
we don't be play it much in our group. I have it only in a couple of main decks that are trying to win really hard. But Nevermore can.
Yeah.
Prosh is the type of deck that Nevermore totally shuts off. Now the Cro-Mat deck we talked about, like a couple episodes ago,
doesn't
care. You can play as many Nevermores as you want. Like it doesn't care about that. But this is one of those decks that like it needs its commander really bad.
Yeah.
And so that's the type of thing. So you need to make sure that in that deck you have ways to kill enchantments and deal with cards like that. So.
Yep.
Anyway, okay, really cool.
Yeah. So let's talk about how you guys can win this week's contest.
We got a new contest.
Swag. Yeah.
Okay, this one, you're going to have to do some stuff.
Yeah. So to enter this week's contest, you guys are going to have to do a little bit of legwork. We want you to record yourselves and send us a recording of you asking us sort of your burning question about EDH or Commander. It can have to do with playing the game, the politics, choosing a commander, about cards, anything really. Whatever is burning in your mind, you need to get the answer for it.
Just try to ask your question in 12 seconds or less.
Yeah, exactly. Record it on your iPhone, your phone, your computer, however. Email it to commandcast@rocketjump.com. And if we choose your question, you will be the winner.
Win big prizes, big money.
Big money.
Can I do it? Can I send a video in?
It was a you weren't listening to the dude's story. It was only audio.
Yeah. Oh. But you can send the video and we'll watch it.
Okay. I want to try to win.
You can win packs, you can win playmats, you can win Funko Pop doll things.
Yeah, and definitely we guarantee you that you're going to have a much better chance winning this, even more than the comments last week. I mean, I don't see us getting more than like 50 entries, so like...
We'll see. They keep surprising me.
That's true. You guys do surprise us.
Plus, you get to
awesome.
Hear yourself on the air if we pick you.
Yeah,
so.
That'd be very sweet. Yeah, so that's how you enter the next contest. Just send us those before... We usually record on Thursday nights, so from the Tuesday that this comes out, you guys have 2 days to do it.
Go fast.
Go fast. That's right. So we'll also be tweeting all this stuff as well. So make sure you follow us at CommandCast on Twitter. And Matt, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm at Matt L. Arnold on Twitter.
And you have
no Instagram or anything else. I think it's just Matt L. Arnold.
If you guys want it, Matt.
Or is it Matthew L. Arnold?
It's Matt L. Arnold.
Okay, thank you. That's
Jimmy knows his Twitter account better than he knows his Twitter account.
I always forget.
But yeah, those like names get stuck in my head. Like I can name off a bunch of like random cards from cons.
It's like the new phone number. You know your friends' Twitter handles now.
Yeah. Well, I would know everyone's full names in college because every time you emailed someone, they would show their full name. So I would know these like weird, just random things get stuck in my head. Anyway, yeah. So Matt is the awesome co-founder, co-creator, co-director of Rocket Jump and VGHS.
Video Game High School. Go check it out.
Go check it
out. Episode 1 from season 3 should be out there.
All the episodes are available on iTunes as well if you want to buy them all at once. And
definitely
Vimeo.
As of this recording, it should be on iTunes, but it may not be in time. We'll see. Yeah, it's all available on Vimeo right now. Just $14.99, all 6 episodes. Maybe on iTunes.
Wait, you can watch the whole season right now?
Yeah, it's all available.
Oh my God, stop listening. Go watch it right
now.
We're just going to close up and play music and that's it. Anyway, there's nothing exciting left to say. Go watch it right now.
Please, we beg of you. You will enjoy it, I promise. Thanks, Matt.
I would say goodbye, but nobody's still listening. They're all watching.
They're all watching.
Yeah, no one's listening anymore.
They're all having a great time right now.
Yeah. They're all watching right now.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
See you guys next time. Yep.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.